livestock producers, federal agencies, and other stakeholders. The UNEP plans fall under the umbrella of the statewide management plan goals, which are to improve management of Utah's elk populations, conserve and improve elk habitat throughout the state, and enhance recreation opportunities for hunting and viewing. And the UNEP plans, they must stay within the sideboards of the statewide plan, and tonight they're being presented as seven-year plans. Purpose of UNEP plans are to define management goals, objectives, and strategies, to outline UNEP boundaries, and address issues and concerns of elks and their habitats. So moving on to population objectives, the statewide population objective is the sum of objectives contained in UNEP plans. And factors that influence population objectives include things like depredation, winter range, social and biological components, range improvements, range health, etc. I've broken these up into regions, so that way we can spend more time or less time on them as we see fit. But for the northern region, we're recommending population increases on the Ogden, Morgan Southridge, East Canyon, and Chalk Creek units. If you look at their populations over time, the Chalk Creek there in blue and Ogden in red, this is just how their populations have done over the last 10 years. So we'll start with Chalk Creek. It's been below its population objective, and then in about 2010, really kicked up and increased on that survey we conducted. And since then, we've gotten really aggressive with antlerless elk control permits and other strategies, working with landowners to try to get additional harvest there, and that population stabled out. Ogden, similar situation. That increase occurred in about 2013, and we've been trying to get aggressive with antlerless permits and strategies that will stabilize and reduce that population. Let's see, the Morgan Southridge unit, the purple line, it's had its peaks and valleys up at the last couple of years, gotten really aggressive and making good progress towards the population objective. And the same thing with East Canyon. We've been over for quite some time, and this last year with some of the permits that we issued, new hunt strategies, dipped into it and hope to see that continue. The Northeast region, recommending 3 population increases. The North Slope Three Corners unit, recommending an increase from 500 to 700. The Wasatch Mountains Current Creek, recommending an increase from 1,200 to 3,200. And then the Wasatch Mountains of Inequin unit, recommending an increase from 1,600 to 1,800. So if you look at these populations, the North Slope Three Corners over the last 10 years started at just over 1,000 animals. And over the last decade or so, we've been right around that population objective. And then if you look at Wasatch Mountains of Inequin there in green, again, pretty good increase early on in from 2006 to 2010, but since then it's been fairly stable. And then the Wasatch Mountains Current Creek, that survey in 2012 showed just an increase in elk. In the last several years, we've been fairly aggressive with harvest, harvesting almost 900 cows, close to 900 cows a year over the last 3 years to really get that population down. And that's come with controversy. The sportsmen have really let us know about elk on the Wasatch and not wanting to see that many permits. And so a lot of conversation with that committee about the need to increase that objective to maintain what we have so we don't have to continue with that downward trend. Southeast region, recommending a slight increase on the 9 Mile Range Creek from 1,600 to 1,800. Now, this is a population that 10 years ago was really hard to get harvest. And with antlerless elk control permits and working with private landowners and other strategies, we've really been able to get that population at or currently below its objective. The Central Region, recommending an increase on the Wasatch Mountains West and the Oker-Stansberry units. If you look at these populations, the Oker-Stansberry has been fairly stable at its objective for a decade, and the Wasatch Mountains West has been over the objective but stable for the last 7 years. Southern Region, we're recommending really no change in the objective, but the difference in this down there is we have a unit called the Greater Plateau Complex, and this encompasses the Monroe, Mount Dutton, and the Plateau subunits. And as a few years ago, we put GPS collars on these elk, and we came to recognize that they don't appreciate or respect these arbitrary boundaries that we gave them, and so they move back and forth, and it's a pretty common occurrence to see elk go between all these different units. And so what we wanted to do was avoid overreacting every time elk crossed a highway with permits. And so we're going to manage to a range. So that way if some elk move off, you don't have to overreact with permits the following year. You can account for that with a population range instead of a specific number. Moving on to habitat, I want to continue our monitoring of range trend and habitat assessments. I want to protect and maintain our winter and summer ranges and minimize impacts to those, mitigate for habitat loss, and support federal agencies in managing horse populations to improve objectives. That seemed to come up in a lot of these unit plans, and so any type of political or social or whatever support they need to help manage those populations, we're happy to lend that. That seemed to be a good thing. And then finally, habitat improvements. Cooperate with our various partners on habitat projects. We have a lot of momentum right now in something called the Watershed Restoration Initiative, which is since 2005. The division and our many, many partners, including sportsmen, have treated over 1.2 million acres and spent about $150 million in habitat restoration. And that's been incredible. And our sportsmen and our federal agency partners have just been incredible and want to see that momentum continue. And finally, continue to improve ranges, fire and on summer ranges, PJ removal, etc. Highlights of the unit plan, some common threads that we saw throughout the state was a tone and a spirit to work with private landowners, livestock producers, land management agencies, tribes, sportsmen, and others to foster good relationships and manage for healthy elk habitats. Also, we want to continue our population monitoring with aerial surveys and use a variety of antlerless harvest strategies to manage to population objectives. If you recall, in the statewide plan that was approved last year, there are a lot more strategies that we have in place now that are going to help biologists and managers have more tools and more flexibility to get elk harvest where they need, and we're excited about those. Also, we want to use antlerless harvest and other management strategies to minimize crop depredation. That seemed to be a priority and a common theme in all these plans, and monitor drought conditions and increase antlerless elk if permits are needed during those years. Moving on to region-specific highlights. Northern region, I want to continue to co-manage elk on the pilots with Nevada and conduct GPS collar study on the cache and assess feeding strategies at Hardware Ranch. Northeast region, work with the Ute Tribe to increase harvest, especially in areas of high depredation or in units that are over objective. I think that relationship's key and vital. And also continue to collect movement data of radio collared elk. That's been a fun project, and we want to expand that if we can. Southeast region, continue to monitor elk and CWD positive units and enhance habitat on their summer range limited units. Central region, communicate with the Goshute tribe on elk management related issues, use private lands only permits to better distribute elk on the Wasatch, and use translocation as a management strategy to distribute elk and make progress towards the population objective on the Oker-Stansberry unit. And these release sites would include Muskrat Canyon and Met Canyon. Southern region, like was mentioned earlier, manage the complex unit down there and have all these units occur in the same unit plan. Because elk may regularly move between these units, manage for a population range. Increase communication with stakeholders, and on the Southwest Desert, if three of the five goals are met, that committee is going to reconvene and evaluate and discuss a potential population increase. And that's all I have, so thank you.
Thank you, Justin. Question, Brother Rack.
I got a question, Justin. A couple of those units, Chalk Creek, I guess that's Northern Region in particular, the population estimate doubled in a year.
Yeah.
Is that real, or are those elk moving from one unit to another unit?
We have limited data on that. I mean, I think on from the cache to the Ogden, you probably have some of that, and Morgan Southridge to East Canyon, you probably have some of that as well. It's interesting. Those northern region units are dominated primarily by private land. I think Chalk Creek itself is 95% private.
Right.
And those landowners, they love elk. They're the ones that were asking for the increase. In fact, probably asking for more of an increase in what we provided. So they're managing for elk on their properties, and they want to see them increase. So.
Another question, Tim?
Yeah, came to us. We had a meeting, I think it was a week ago, right, Daniel?
Yeah.
And we noticed that we were doing a lot better on Tribe.
Can you grab the mic?
Grab the big mic.
Yeah, the little guy is not working.
Struggling.
Yeah, he did bring up that he noticed that we did do really good on our elk as far as the mature bulls. And I told him, I said, well, apparently we're doing something right. You know, and I think there's being a lot of elk being killed that shouldn't be being killed. So, you know, that's my opinion.
Sure.
And I noticed in the Hill Creek area, we gave out 60 permits in the Hill Creek unit. And the reason for that was because we don't have any mature bulls. And, you know, we're used to seeing something 380, 400 class, you know. We're not seeing that. And I brought that up before with you that, you know, I think you guys are kind of killing a little bit too many of our future bulls. So it's not only hurting us, but I know if you talk to your public, they'll tell you the same.
Yeah.
And I think you guys need to start listening to what your public says.
In all fairness, we do work with our public, and we have meetings like this that have a public process and provide recommendations and open to input. The one thing that we did with the public in particular was when we passed that statewide plan, there was a conversation as to should we continue to manage for these age objectives that we are. And on the book list, we have high elk age objectives, and that was supported. They wanted to see those age objectives, and on our data, we're harvesting 7-8 year old bulls in many of those cases, and you know, that doesn't always equate to a 400-inch bull, but those ages is what we're going to manage to. And if in the future if those drop and we're seeing our ages decline, we'll certainly take actions to recommend permit decreases. I think that's wise.
Well, you know, like us, I'm speaking for the tribe.
Sure.
We've seen a decline in those big animals, you know. So I don't know what's going on there. You know, I've been grown up in that country, so.
Any other questions? Questions by the public. If you got a question, please step up the mic. State your name, and then go ahead and ask the question.
Brian Snow. I grew up here. Been gone for about 20-something years. Come back, and growing up here, I've seen a lot of change. And then coming back, I've seen change throughout the wildlife. And I agree. I've seen a lot of change. Things that have declined in numbers. I know you guys say numbers are up. I beg to differ, but anyway, going back on the elk herd. A fellow gentleman I work with, he had an antler tag, and that's close to the Indian reservation, and he spent the whole hunt out there. And he's killed a deer, elk every year on public land. He went out there, waited, I think he said 19 years to draw a tag out there. Saw two spike and four cows. And that's a limited, that's supposed to be a premier unit. But I go back to the number of tags that you're giving out on your spike and the duration of the hunts, hunting all the way to January, your cow tags that you're giving out. It's hurting the herd. It does hurt the herd. You're right, it does still show the numbers. You are controlling the herd. But I mean, it's taken away from somewhere in there.
Is there a question in there somewhere?
Yeah, what are you guys doing for the antler unit? For units like that, that our numbers are going down.
Yeah. Derek, you want to take a stab at that one?
What we're doing for the antler unit? Currently on the antler unit, we didn't have a committee this year. We've had one several years in the past, and we met a bunch of times on the antler unit. So we weren't anticipating an increase to the objective or a decrease to the objective, and so we didn't convene a committee on that one. So currently it's just being managed the same as it has been in the past 10 years. So
age objective, is that what?
Age objective is the same as it's been in I don't know how long. since they were set way back, I mean, it's probably been over 10 years in that age.
Six and a half.
Is it about the ejected below or about right there?
It's about at, it's at the ejected for age. We've really reduced permits. We have very few permits on the answer unit as far as limited entry bolt tags. I don't know the exact numbers off the top of my head, but it's around 20 for the entire unit for all hunts. So.
How does it, where is it in relation to population objective?
It's actually over the objective right now, slightly by a couple hundred over the objective.
So, yeah, and the age objective is 5.5 to 6. That's what I mean.
He wants to know about cow tags. How many cow tags do you get? When do you get in your count? Is that after they migrate in? Or
yeah, we, I mean, we do our counts in the winter. I mean, it's a wintering population objective, and so you do get migration onto the unit. Cow tags, we've really reduced them over the years. There's not that many cow tags on there.
But you have to reduce
very few, yeah.
Thank you. Thank you. Other questions?
I'm Carl Young. I've been a resident here of Utah all my life, and I myself personally affiliated with the Brook Cliffs, surrounding areas, northeastern region, main concern. Here they keep coming up with these statistics of how great and how strong a deer and elk herd are in this northeastern region. Myself personally, I don't think our elk has any barrier of what real estate they're on. If it's public land in migratory pattern, same with their deer, I will state my reasons. This spike unit that they keep conducting in this Brook Cliff unit itself, these amount of hunters or tags that just continue in this territory of in pursuit of this spike tag, it is tearing up the resources. They keep going further and further, pushing beyond. I agree with the fact that the deer herd may be stronger in some areas, less than others. And I'm like the tribe fish and game representative here, as well as myself. The numbers are fewer. Our quality of bulls are not as great as they predict. We might come out with a few statistics that reach in a trophy class bull. But for taking for statistics, me affiliated in this book class, all summer long, for the last 38 years, I have seen less trophy bull elk since this spike hunt has been conducted for the last 7 years. For an instance, there at the top of Little Creek, counted approximately about 350 head elk. Five spike bulls, fourth ranks bulls. The biggest bull in there was a 5x5, probably a 240 bull. Them elk are heading out, bunch stuff, moving out. You take a limited unit that pertains to our taxpaying dollars to build up an area that we can harvest a reasonable, respectful buck or bull and have that kind of quality of them animals sitting there to pick from on a limited entry draw where we spent years, time, money, trying to perform a chance or even a draw. When you go out there and find that kind of results, it's got a sour taste in my mouth. And for the quality of these animals, I don't see the numbers. And I do my research, I do my studies. Affiliated with that country for several months, year after year, I think their projected plans may have a good balance for management, but these numbers that is reported, I think are lacking in great less numbers than what's predicted. Thank you.
We're into the question period, and I think you had a comment there, but we'll get to the rest of the comments here in a little bit. Any more questions? Please do, Brett.
Could you put up there the populations on the northeast region, Justin? I think on the listening to the comment on anthro and then the Southwest Yellowstone, where we're 2,500
Brett.
Over.
Can you talk a little louder?
Just talk into the mic if you can. Thank
you. Is this on?
Yep.
Okay. I'm familiar with the anthro unit and also Southwest Yellowstone. The Southwest Yellowstone unit, where it was 2,500 over objective, is almost exclusively a tribal land.
can't get the number down because they go to tribal land. This year it was before the season, and some of these emails are reflecting that. The anthro, it's a combination that it might be tribal, but it was in the past, there's Nutter Ranch and all that other private land that was locked up. Same issue. So the counts are done, I'm just clarifying a point. The counts are done in the winter. The lack of maybe seeing these large number of animals could be related that seasonally they move to private and tribal during the hunting season.
Yeah, and it probably depends on the winter too. I think you have some of these winters, especially on the 9 mile, the Range Creek portion anyways, you get those hard winters, those elk can move down further, lower in elevation, off areas like the Nutter Ranch. We conduct these surveys in January, February, when we get the adequate snow conditions to do
so. And it's a tough, we deal with the cow tags in the spring, but it's tough. Because you really don't have a tool. The tribe, Tim and I are friends, but they don't hunt the cow elk up there.
Yeah.
And so they don't move them back on the tribe, and so you sit there with a 2,500 surplus.
Well, see, what went on was, I've got a sister-in-law. They hunt over in Nutters and Brindage and all of that. Only one time, and that was the second to the last day, that they ran into a boil, and they killed him. And he wasn't all that. They hunted all season with them, and we start in August, orchard season. Goes until October 28th. And it's done. We don't have a muzzleloader season. We don't have any of that. The council come in and said, no, everything's going to be shut off. Come December 18th, which is the buffalo, the whole nine yards. So,
How many of these elk stay on tribal ground year-round versus migrate on to public ground?
From the statistics, like last year, we got a count, and that was January, the end of January, first part of February, we did our study. And we had pretty close to between Little Water to Rock Creek. We had pretty close to maybe 5,500 head.
5,500?
Yeah. See, but you guys got to remember, half those elk are on the mountain, so when they come down on us, you can't just say they're all horse.
Sure.
Because the snow pushes them down, so they're not all on us.
Yeah, the purpose of my question was just because you're seeing a decline in quality on the tribe, I don't know how that really...
I'm talking in the Hill Creek area.
Yeah, my point is I'm not sure how that relates to neighboring units. What we're talking about is on these public land units where we have boundaries of elk, we're managing to an age objective, and we have the data. We pull these teeth and we cut them and we say, okay, this bull's 7 years old, this bull's 9 years old, and we take these averages, and so I'm curious to know how many of these elk migrate off, because all these units are managed different, and we can't say, well, a portion of the unit's down or one unit's down, so we're going to extrapolate that to an entire region with different hunt boundaries and strategies. That was the purpose of my question.
Well, I know we did really good up on the north unit, but the south unit, we did not do that good.
Sure. Okay.
Like I said, we had to take from 100 permits that we usually give and take it down to 60. The board wanted to go down to 50, but the council said, no, we'll give 60.
Okay.
Any other questions? We'll get into comments. We've got a couple comments cards. Let's go ahead and hit those. Randy Quell. You hear Randy? He's with the Tip Archery.
What? Sorry.
So state your name if you would, Randy.
My name is Randy Quill. I'm representing Timpanogos Archery. And first of all, I'd like to thank you board members and the DWR for all that you do. We appreciate that. We would like to concur with the DWR's recommendation for the elk management that they want to do. So.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Ben Lauder,
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ben Lauder, representing the Utah Longhorns Association tonight. I had the chance to sit on the statewide elk committee as well as the Wasatch elk committee, the unit committee. I've got to say I'm really excited about a lot of the new tools that we've got in place with these new plans. We're starting to put them into action. I'm really excited about the increases that are being recommended tonight, and we support the management plans as presented here tonight. Thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else have any comments on this one? So we'll go to the comments on the rec. Any additional comments? Discussion? Well, I'm going to take a motion.
I'll go ahead and make the motion to accept the DWR's proposal for these elk unit management plans as they presented here tonight.
We have a second.
I'll second it.
Okay. Ben made the motion, and it was Dave that seconded it. All in favor? That's we've got the 6 in favor. And opposed? Or you abstaining?
I'm abstaining.
And one abstaining. Two abstaining. Thank you. Looks like it passed. Justin, you're still up to bat with the Bucks, Bulls, and Once in a Lifetime. I do have several comment cards on this one. I've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. If you want anybody else that hasn't given you a card on this one, if you'd like to comment on it, please fill out a card. Put that on the table out there.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, RAC members. Tonight I'm going to present the Bucks Bulls Once in a Lifetime season dates and boundary descriptions for 2017. So to begin, I'd like to recommend the following general season deer hunt dates. These are all the same as last year, except they've been moved up one day to avoid a Sunday opener and to start on the Saturday. Your 28-day archery season, your 9-day muzzleloader season, and your any weapon season there for 9 days, going from October 21st to the 29th. For elk, similar thing. Simply move these dates up one day. For the archery spike, archery any bull, any weapon, and muzzleloader seasons for general season elk hunt dates. Moving on to some statewide recommendations, and we don't have many tonight, but the first is to add 3 new limited entry muzzleloader deer units. And these are units that are managed for $18 to $20 per 100 does, and they're exceeding their objectives. And if you recall, these are hunts that they would occur on general season units from November 1st to November 9th with a muzzleloader, and you would use your limited entry points to hunt a general season unit. And this is something that came out of the statewide deer plan. And this will be our 3rd year implementing it, and it's been really good. We've got a lot of positive feedback on this. So the units we're presenting tonight are the Mount Dutton, Ogden, and Plateau Fish Lake unit. With that, we recommend discontinuing the hunt on the following unit, the Plateau Boulder Kaparowitz. And this is a unit that has gotten a lot of attention in several of the other racks, so I'll probably just take a second and speak to it a little bit more. The reason for the recommendation is because it dropped below the 3-year average this year. And the strategy in the statewide plan says to explore using this as an option, which we did, and if it's below $20 per 100 does, it would be kicked out. And this unit's garnered some attention because the buck to doe ratio has gone from 16.4 to 19.9 to over 20 to 20.6, so it's trending in a really positive direction, and it's a great unit, it's doing well. But to stick with the letter of the law, which is kind of what we want to do in transparency, that we're recommending it discontinued. But it is a good unit, and it's doing really well, and so that's what's garnered a lot of that discussion. So. Next statewide Bucks Bull once-in-a-lifetime recommendation change is to add 2 limited-entry bull elk hunts. These are hunts that overlap the general season spike elk hunt in early to mid-October. And this is a strategy that we implemented last year. I think we tried it on 4 units or so. We'd like to try it again on the Central Mountains Manti and Wasatch Mountains unit. And the purpose behind this is you would look at this at the surface and say, what a horrible hunt. Why would anybody want to hunt with all these spike hunters and all these cow hunters? And this is a strategy that was put together in the statewide elk plan to essentially move some of the pressure in units like the Wasatch, where we have so many of these rifle permits and your only option is an early or a late. We figured if we had a hunt like this, it would be less desirable, and we were candid about it and upfront and transparent, that you could draw that permit with a rifle with easier draw odds than your earlier late typical rifle hunts. So, but again, the feedback we've got has been pretty good. We don't have the harvest data yet. It's been our first year, but minimal law enforcement problems on these units. Moving on to regional recommendations. In the southern region, we recommend adding a mountain goat hunt on the Mount Dutton unit, adding an archery pronghorn hunt on the Panguitch Lake Zion North unit, and issuing a non-resident permit on the Caparitz West Bighorn Sheep unit. In the past, if you drew a Caparitz permit as a non-resident, you can hunt the east, the west, and the Escalante. But now where the west has enough permits that it can have its own standalone non-resident permit, if you draw a non-resident permit, you can only hunt the east or the Escalante for those other two. So really what this is an indication that our sheep are doing well down there. In the southeast part of the state, recommend splitting the 9 Mile Range Creek Bighorn Sheep Unit into the Gray Canyon and Jack Creek units, and these season dates will run from November 1st to the 30th. We'd like to alter the San Juan South Bighorn Sheep boundary to include the San Juan River. We'd like to recommend adding an archery and muzzleloader management buck hunt on the Henrys, and the purpose for this recommendation is because last year we were at 65 bucks per 100 does on the Henrys, and that's far exceeding that buck to doe ratio that's outlined in the management plan. And as we went to add more permits, we realized we have 1 5-day season in November, and it was pretty full. And instead of adding to that, our commitment to the RACs and the board was to come back with a strategy to add more management hunts in the future if we needed to. And so these are hunts that would start later on in the archery and muzzleloader seasons to allow those management bucks to be harvested. And then finally, add a pronghorn archery hunt to the Centerfell Desert and 9 Mile Range Creek units, and a muzzleloader hunt to the Centerfell North unit. In the northern region, we recommend discontinuing the Pilot Mountain Bighorn Sheep Hunt. This population's doing fine. We just co-manage it with Nevada, and we get a permit 1 year, and they get it the next year. So we're just on that same schedule. I'd like to recommend discontinuing the Stansbury's Mountains Bighorn Sheep Hunt. This is a population that hasn't been doing so hot lately because of disease issues, and so I wanted to pull that one from the table. The northeast region, we recommend altering the Book Cliffs Wild Horse Bench Bison Hunt to include the 9 Mile area. And these season dates would run from August 1st to January 31st, and we'd like to add a bison hunt, a cow-only one, that would occur on the Book Cliffs unit. Going back to that first recommendation, the reason for the long season dates is we'll have challenges with bison that'll cross the river onto the 9 Mile side, which doesn't have a management plan. And so those hunters that had a permit for the Wild Horse Bench area could harvest some of those bison that have wandered onto the Anthro and other areas. Also, we'd like to change the season dates on the Book Cliffs Bison Hunt, the Hunter's Choice Hunt, to October 14th to December 1st. We'd like to change the season dates on the North Slope Three Corners elk hunt, move it back a week from October 7th to the 19th, and then combine the North Slope Three Corners Bear Top and West Daggett Bighorn Sheep units into one hunt for those units. I think it was the last RAC meeting, the Utah Bowman's Association came forward with an informational, and at our last Wildlife Board meeting, UBA proposed a once-in-a-lifetime archery-only hunting experience. And what they were trying to do was to get feedback. It wasn't an action log item, it was just a concept. And the idea was to see if hunters would exchange a once-in-a-lifetime permit for an archery-only permit with expanded seasons. And the Wildlife Board, they asked us to review this proposal, review the data, and provide a recommendation for the RACs this year, or this November. So in so doing, I don't want to bore anyone with data, but this is kind of the take-home message for bighorn sheep hunts. On the far right, The average success rate on a bighorn sheep hunt is 96%. And hunters on average are hunting about 6.4 days. And your season lengths are really quite long, 51 days for deserts and 33 days for Rockies. And the average number of permits per hunt is 3. And so as you can see, 21 of our 25 hunts that are on the far left have between 1 and 5 permits in them. So 84% of the hunts have between 1 and 5 permits. And 12 of the 25 hunts have 1 or 2 permits. And so this is one where our tree hunters can go and draw some of these units with only 1 or 2 permits and already have a hunting experience that is their own. That's kind of what the data for bighorn sheep are telling us. For mountain goats, it's a little different, though. It's not as clear cut. As you can see, about 38% of the hunts have between 1 and 5 hunters in them, with 46% the bulk having between 6 and 10. So those hunts have a few more hunters in them. Average success rate for a mountain goat hunter is 96%. Average number of days hunted is about 3.5. Quite a lengthy season at 50 days, and average number of permits per hunt is 8. Bison, even more. So we have more hunters in these hunts than mountain goats or bighorn sheep, with the success rate being about 85%, days hunted about 3.5, season length 24 days, and permits per hunt is 14. And then finally for moose, again, really high success rates, 94%. Days hunted is 4, season length 34 days, and the average number of permits per hunt is 6. But as you can see, 75% of the hunts have 5 permits or less. So again, that's probably leans more towards the kind of like the bighorn sheep, where you have fewer hunters in these hunts. So in reviewing this data and looking at the UVA proposal that was initially taken through the process and feedback, the division is recommending adding a 7-day extension to the end of each once-in-a-lifetime hunt that would be archery only. And the concept's a little tweaked from what you heard from UVA. This isn't a situation where hunters would turn in their tag and not be able to hunt their season dates and only have these pre- or post-dates that would be archery only. Hunters would be able to hunt their entire season dates that's outlined in the RAC packet. And if they're unsuccessful, they can take those last 7 days and use archery only equipment. That would be applied to every hunter with that tag. This wouldn't be valid for hunts on Antelope Island, the Pilot Mountain CWMU, or hunts that end on January 31st. And if multiple once-in-a-lifetime hunts occur on the same unit for the same species, the 7-day extension will be applied at the end of the last hunt. So for instance, on the Henry Mountains, we have 4 bison hunts. If you end your first bison hunt, you wouldn't get a 7-day extension at the end of that would overlap the second rifle bison hunt. All the hunters, if you're unsuccessful, you'd get 7 days at the end of the last bison hunt, if that makes sense. So it'd be archery only, archers only in the field. Access to hunt areas is not guaranteed, especially some of these mountain goats areas where Forest Service roads are closed, and then aerial surveys may occur during these hunts as well, especially on our desert bighorn sheep populations. Some key dates for consideration for 2017, big game drawing, popular question, we get it often, when's it going to be? The application period would be January 26th through March 2nd. If you're just applying for a bonus or preference point, that would be extended to March 16th, and the results would be posted by May 31st. And then finally, some key dates for our hunters with disabilities. These are pretty standard. We present them every year. It would essentially be 5 days pre or post these general season hunts that hunters with disabilities would be granted an extension. And that's all I have. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Justin. Question period here. I've got a question for you. Well, here in the buck lifts, we started that spike elk hunt a few years back. Yeah. I get a lot of hunters are out there that buy that tag, think it's the best thing since sliced bread to go out there and be able to hunt a spike and be there in the wild where you're going to see all the big bulls in their rutting period. But and then you got the hunters that actually draw the tag, that are limited entry tag, that are a little bit concerned that there's all these spike hunters out there that causing havoc among themselves. What's the data telling us as far as the numbers go? How many spike? I mean, are we killing the spikes? Is it the numbers staying equal or staying going down? What's this telling us? Now we've done this for 3 or 4 years. Now what's it telling us?
Yeah, I can give you a statewide perspective, and then I might need some help from the regions on pulling up specific data for the book list. Statewide on these spike hunts, success rates range from about 13 to 17%. And so it's, I mean, We kill maybe 2,000 spikes a year statewide throughout the 15,000 permits that we issue. And really, as we worked through this on the statewide elk committee, it was one of these situations where to draw a limited entry bull hunt in Utah is extremely difficult. People always joke about it being a once-in-a-lifetime hunt for these seven and a half to eight-year-old units, 6.5 to 7-year-old units. But hunters still want to hunt bulls. And so with the statewide plan, we were striving to find that balance to where hunters wanted to have hunting opportunities that they can go and they can learn new units and they can take their kids and they can, you know, you could have that over-the-counter hunting experience with low success. You can draw a spike tag or in any bull, or not draw, just obtain a spike or in any bull tag over the counter and learn new areas and prepare for the one day that you do draw that limited entry bull. Specific to the book list, you want to speak to that?
Sure.
Yeah, okay.
Clint Sampson, I'm the biologist over the...
There's a mic right here.
Mike. You know, I got such huge feet.
I prefer a cordless myself for my finishing moves. The book cliffs, as far as the spike numbers go, we don't have anything for this last fall, but according to last year in 2015, we had roughly 153 spikes killed. The success rate was higher than the statewide average. The statewide average for the spike hunt is around 15%, and for the book cliffs, it ended up being 26%. And so people are figuring it out. It's a successful hunt. I mean, you can go out there and you see, you know, numerous amounts of elk and have a great, you know, family experience where, you know, everyone can get a spike tag now. Before they sell out, I guess I should say that. But as far as it affecting the limited entry side of things, our age data shows that we're still maintaining 7.5-year-old bulls on average being killed out there. And last year was even, just specifically in 2015, I think was around 7.9. So right there around that 8-year-old age class. And so we did expect to see a little bit of a drop in the age class with the spike hunt being in the book cliffs as long as it has been, but it's still, we're still able to maintain that quality of bull age class.
Don't drop the mic. I want to really bad.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
Can I make one more point with the spike hunt and the any bull hunts that we have? I understand a lot of times hunters, especially the limited entry hunters, say, well, if you kill all your freshmen, you'll never have any seniors. So stop killing spikes. And that's kind of the argument that's made quite often. But really, as we just saw with the elk unit plans that we passed, if you're going to manage for 6.5 to 7-year bulls and 7.5 to 8-year-old bulls and these higher age class bulls, you need to get some bull harvest as yearlings in order to do that, because if not, your bull to cow ratio would be so off, and because you're managing to a population objective of hypothetically, say you had a unit that you can only have 2,000 elk, if you can't get any harvest on your spikes, continually what you'll have to do is kill your cows, because your bulls have to grow. They need so much time to get to a 7.5 to 8-year-old bull. And so you'd be killing your cows, and your production won't be maximized. And so you're really limiting opportunity if you don't take some spike harvest, because you'll have so few cows producing that you won't have that many bulls coming into the system because it takes so long to grow them. So I know that's a little counterintuitive, but really one of the biggest benefits of these spike hunts is to help us have as many bulls as we have that are in the older age class. I get it. It's not always intuitive, but there are some real health and population benefits to it. So.
Thank you. Successful. You have questions?
Yeah, I think the thing with the elk spike that I hear from the public is the timing of it. Yeah. Not that they don't need to be taken, but the timing when somebody waits 12 to 15 years that they have to fight. I mean, you look everywhere in the country, there's a loyalty program, right? Yeah. Everybody signs up for those. And so I think what the public is seeing is that what matters is more about taking the spikes than the guys that stay true to a unit for 10 or 15 or 20 years. So I think it's the timing of the hunt more than the objective. That's what I hear.
What's wrong with the timing of the hunt, just so I understand?
Just it's at the same time.
No.
A lot of times.
The time that we hunt our spikes and the time we hunt our limited entry bulls are not at the same time on the book fest. Unless
I'm happy where they're close, one happens before the other, correct?
Yeah, archery is the exception. That is true. And if you look back at these dates, yeah, thank you, Jake. Someone's got to keep me in line. If you go back to these dates, the reason that the general spike bull and the general, for the archery spike and archery any bull, the reason that archery spike ends a week early is so that the hunters that drew that limited entry bull hunt have a week closest to the rut by themselves with no other spike hunters. And this was a change that we made many years ago, and the feedback we got on it was really quite good. So, but for your muzzleloader and your any weapon, that won't be the case unless we're getting creative on some units like this. So, but they know what they're going into when they draw this. We're pretty transparent. So, thanks, Joe.
Justin, you've made recommendations for some of these other regions. I know there's three of them having the meetings. How did they comfortable with your recommendations? Did they pass them?
On which one? I'm sorry, on these?
On the northeast.
Oh, on the northeast.
You had recommendations, I think, on the north region, the central region, recommendations.
Oh, on these right here?
Yeah. Northeast, that's us.
Northern and central?
Central.
Yeah.
Was they okay with this? Did they pass it?
Yeah, so the regional recommendations have passed every RAC, yes.
That's what I was wondering.
Yeah.
If you present these, and I was just wondering how they was okay with all of them that you presented.
Yeah, not the entire presentation. There's been quite a bit of discussion on the UBA proposal and our 7-day extension. But on these regional site specific recommendations, yeah, and like general season days.
You have to vote on that tonight.
Yeah.
So I was just curious, how they respond.
Yeah, it's passed.
I have another question.
Joe.
Yes, another question on the Henry Mountains managed. So just a clarification or classification of management buck. What is a management buck? What does that constitute as far as points or spread, or how do you manage a management hunt?
Yeah, good question. I didn't do a good job explaining that. A management buck is a buck that has 3 points or less on one side, and a point is being defined as 1 inch or less. And so, really, what we're trying to do is lower the buck to doe ratio on that unit. And I know that sounds crazy. People say, why would you want to? The more the better, right? But no, not the more the better, because antler growth for both deer and elk, but deer in this case in particular, antler growth is a secondary growth characteristic. And so if you have really high densities of bucks that are running together and they're competing with each other for resources, one of the first things to go is antler quality. And so if you want to manage for better bucks, just letting the buck to doe ratio grow and grow and grow can be counterproductive to that. And so if you get some of that harvest, those resources can go into antler growth as opposed to competing with your cohort. So
how many permits would be offered on that? I mean, it sounds pretty exciting.
It's a really popular hunt. It's probably our hardest hunt in the state because it's an antler point restriction. And my nephew drew it 2 years ago, and taking him out there and looking, and you look at these deer for quite a long time. And we have 30 permits in the hunt now. And we didn't want to go more than that because we didn't want to rush people into saying, well, is that a legal buck? Is it not? And all that competition. So we just were trying to find avenues to get more permits in there and expand some opportunity that way.
So is there a permit number yet on that management hunt? Would be offered?
I'll bring that in the spring. But what we're trying to do is, tonight, just so everyone's clear, we're trying to build the hunt structure. And then whatever's approved, I'll come back with recommendations, with numbers to populate these hunts that we approve. So my guess is, though, it was 30 last year. The purpose of creating these is to increase it, so we probably have more. So
okay.
Could you clarify that week extension on the once in a lifetime, how that timing would work? If they were unsuccessful in their rifle tag, then they could go in and make that decision after? their season?
Yeah, so what it is these hunts that we have for once in a lifetime, they're any weapon hunts. So right now the hunter can already use archery, muzzleloader, or any weapon. So if they're unsuccessful during that time frame, they'd have 7 days at the back end that would just be archery only.
With a new tag or?
It's their same tag.
Just,
so
they'd just have another season.
Yeah, so in the rack packet for once in a lifetime hunts, you have your standard hunt date, and then there's an additional hunt date next to it that says archery only, and it's just that 7 day extension for once in a lifetime.
They wouldn't have to contact anybody, get any permit or anything. They'd just be able to hunt.
We just wanted to make it simple, and so to contact, you know, the local office and swap out a tag, why make a hunter come in? Let's just extend it to everyone. And if you saw, the success rates are so high on these hunts that I don't think it would apply to lots and lots of people. But if you weren't successful for whatever reason, or you just wanted that time in the field alone as an archery hunter, you would have something. So,
okay, thank you.
Yeah. I had a question on the bison. The ones on the wild horse bench.
Yeah.
Those, I know they're going across the river. How many tags you plan on giving?
Again, this is something that we'd populate in the spring, but if you guys have a rough estimate, it might, I don't know. You guys want to take a stab?
Probably anywhere from 20 to 30, somewhere.
Yeah. What do we issue now on the wild horse bench? Is it about 15 or so?
Did we do 15 or something last year? And then, of course, there's exterior boundary permits as well that you tribe members get for that hunt because it includes exterior boundary lands.
Well, see, we had a lot of those buffaloes, I should say, all of those buffaloes that go across that river are ours.
Yeah, you know, we just, we claim the management authority for the animals that are on non-tribal lands.
Right.
Obviously, anything
right.
non-tribal trust land is under the jurisdiction authority of the Ute tribe.
Right. You know, so, you know, I know we was trying to sit down and come to agreement on that. But see, you guys want us to help manage your elk. But, you know, we can go somewhere else with that at a different time.
Yeah. You know, no, so. Anything we're doing, you know, we're following the cooperative agreement with the Ute tribe and issuing the exterior boundary permits. You know, if we expand the boundary like we're proposing doing, you know, that'll there's some additional exterior boundary land. Pretty much the entire Anthro unit is exterior boundary. So it'll probably actually increase the share of permits that the tribe gets for what we issue. If we issue a similar number as to what we issued last year, the tribe's going to end up actually getting more permits.
Is that down the line with the rest of the animals too, that, you know, like the bighorn sheep in the 9 mile area?
So there's, you know, in the southeastern region, the 9 mile area, they're split and they're going to have two different sheep hunts.
Yeah.
The Jack Creek sheep hunt includes a little bit of exterior boundary land, so the tribe will continue to get a permit there. I don't think the other sheep hunt includes any exterior boundary land, so the tribe probably would not get one for that. The Gray, what was it called?
Gray Canyon.
Gray Canyon.
Yeah.
Yeah, but the Jack Creek would. So.
See, and I know we got a call from the Price office, and I know a bunch of our buffalo went over there. So where are they coming up with tags to hunt those animals?
Yeah, so they haven't hunted any this year. I know they extended permission to the Ute tribe to go and herd them back.
Yeah, we brought them back yesterday.
Yeah.
We brought 288 back.
Yeah, so I think there's been a lot of effort to try to work cooperatively with the tribe to try to address the issue of bison leaving tribal lands. But it is a cause for some concern for the guys that have, you know, the grazing permits over there and private landowners.
But I know
we're committed. We have been and are committed to continuing to work cooperatively with the tribe as much as we can to try to get stuff resolved and figure out solutions that are fair and equitable.
We'll sit down and talk.
Thanks, Dex. The other question by the rec. Okay, we'll entertain questions by the public. If you have a question, please step up the rack or the mic there and speak your name. We do have comment cards. We'll have comments after this period. So if you got a question, please ask Justin your question.
Hi, my name is Jeff Plum. I've lived here for all my life, 33 years. Why on that extension are archery people so special? My mom's 60 years old. She's been putting in for moose She's not going to go out there with a bow.
Yeah. I would say this. What we're talking about is a social issue. There's times where it's biological that can hurt populations, and that's where we take a pretty firm stance. And then there's social issues. And this was a proposal that came from the Utah Bowman's Association to get some feedback. And so we're just trying to accommodate that. And the other part is we're not singling them out and saying that they're special or someone's less special. With our proposal, everybody has the same chance to draw those permits as before. It's just if you drew that permit, you're given some additional hunting opportunities. That's it.
Yeah, but why just a bow? If you draw that tag, why not just say, all right, here's your extra 7 days, go hunt it with whatever you want?
That's a great question. If you look at
you know, because like I said, my mom's almost 70 years old. She's been putting in this for almost 20 years.
Sure.
She's not going to go out there with a bow.
Yeah. So turn around real quick and take a look at that. The success rates on these hunts for moose, if she's putting in for moose, they're already 94%. So hunters that are drawing these permits, that they have very, very high success rates. All we're saying is that if they're not successful for whatever reason, those hunters that choose to do so could take an additional 7 days. And
but I'm just asking, why just a bow? Why just a bow?
Because we're trying to accommodate the request from the Utah Bowman's Association. That's what it is.
So you're trying to give privilege to someone else instead of other people?
It's a social issue. So if you're not in favor of it, say it's not in favor.
No, I'm not against bow hunters. Yeah, you know, I have lots of friends that are bow hunters.
But I would say
that's why just, you know, that's kind of bullcrap because people's been putting in this for 20 years.
Sure.
And you say, all right, these people that are young and able and bow hunt,
help.
Need to go out an extra 7 days versus people that want to go out with a rifle, you're screwed.
Help me understand. We're not taking anything away from your mother or any other hunter that would put in for these permits. We're not doing that.
You're saying, all right, people with bow hunters are more privileged.
No. Don't put an intention on our recommendation. What we're doing is that there was a proposal that was taken through the public process, and it did have some level of positive feedback. It did. If they took that informational through. And everybody, the RACs and the public said, you know what, this is the dumbest idea we've ever heard. We wouldn't be taking one through. But there were aspects of that proposal that were highly favored by the RACs and the public. And so, you know, oftentimes our agency gets accused of not listening to the public, that we're closed-minded, we don't think outside the box, public input doesn't matter. And in this case, a proposal was taken through, and there was positive feedback on it, and so we're trying to act on that and provide that
opportunity. So you're telling me if I go get a whole bunch of people to sign a piece of paper and give it to you, you'll say, all right, rifle hunters get to do it too.
Sure. What I'm saying is it's a social issue. And so the job that these RAC members have tonight is to wade through that. There's going to be people here tonight that like the proposal, and there's going to be people here tonight that don't like the proposal. And that's the challenge that they're going to have.
Well, I don't know. I think it's kind of bullcrap because you're kind of singling out people. But
Just in the question.
Sure. Well, that's what I said. I have a question.
Yeah, you did. Fill out one of these cards because we're going to get to the comment here in a minute. You can get to it.
So basically what he's asking is, his grandma's 60 years old. Wait, is there a way? Brian Snow. Sorry. From before.
Sorry.
Is there a way that they can amend it for like certain people that are like that with a disability or they're older, they can go out and use maybe a crossbow?
So
they can amend it. It's archery.
On the any weapon hunt, so the season date that they would have, they can use a crossbow during that time frame.
On the extended seven?
No, not on the extended
seven.
That's
what I'm saying, because it's still archery.
Yeah.
It's an arrow, it's a bow, but on a frame.
No, so...
So my question is there a possibility that they can amend it so that somebody with a disability or of age that cannot draw a bow back, with a letter from a doctor, because I know they use that during the youth hunt, that they could actually do that in a once-in-a-lifetime hunt. So that somebody that does wait until they are 70, 75 years old and they have shoulder problems, all they can do is shoot a gun, or they could shoot a crossbow. Is that possible?
Yes. Yeah, it is.
And can they look into that when they pass it, the...
Yeah, certainly. And we already have it in place. So, like, if you look at this slide
for
here...
For the archery, but it doesn't say with a crossbow.
Yeah, well, by rule... Okay, I get that you can say that they're the same, but by rule, we define archery equipment different than that of a crossbow. In our definitions of rules, crossbows are any weapon, so not archery.
Right.
But yeah.
I know he has a concern. I'm just trying to help him out.
No, I get it. We're not trying to rain on parades. I mean, the rat can certainly alter any of these recommendations that come forth tonight.
Yeah. I've got a question.
Yeah.
Isn't there already opinion there for the archery hunt that if they aren't capable with that doctor's note, that they are capable of using the crossbow during the regular archer season, right?
Yeah.
Would that still carry forward into this extended season?
It can, if you guys would like to see that recommendation. I mean, it's right now on our archery hunts, I guess it's already applied. We already have that. You wouldn't need it on the any weapon portion. They can already move forward with whatever weapon they'd like. So, you know, if you want to strengthen that language in your final vote one way or the other, feel free. I mean, we can take a closer look at that.
Yeah, we can do that.
Yeah.
We can do that. Other comment or other questions? Questions by the public? All right, thank you. Let's jump in the comment period. I've got four names here. I've got Ben Louder, I've got Gail Batty, Randy Quayle, Kyle Young, and Sean Fletcher. It's kind of going that order, so Ben, you're up to bat.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ben Louder, representing the Utah Bowmen's Association. Thanks for your time here tonight and the opportunity to give public comment. We support the division's recommendations as presented with one exception. That exception is concerning a handout that I handed out to all of you beforehand. Leading into that, let me give a little bit of background. As Justin has just mentioned, back in September, we brought a informational proposal to the RACs and the Wildlife Board concerning an archery-only opportunity for once-in-a-lifetime species. The intent of that proposal was to provide an archery-only opportunity for once-in-a-lifetime species without creating new hunts or without changing any draw odds. That was the original intent. As we took this through the RACs and the Wildlife Board, we received a lot of feedback, which was great. That was the whole point of taking it through. A lot of that feedback was people asking us and recommending, why don't you guys ask for new hunts? Let's go ahead and ask for some new hunts. And one of the primary reasons that was stated for that was hunting with a bow, as we all know, has a lower success rate and could potentially add some additional opportunity and, essentially kind of help address that issue of point creep that we have in that once-in-a-lifetime in those tags. And so with that feedback, we've met with multiple groups. We met with SFW, Mueller Foundation, Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation, and we came up with a proposal, and that's what I've handed out to you tonight. This is a joint proposal from those four organizations, and our proposal, our recommendation, is to create six new archery hunts for once-in-a-lifetime species. These hunts, and I'll go through them real quick, two Rocky Mountain Bighorn Sheep hunts, one on the 9 Mile Jack Creek unit, one on the Box Elder Newfoundland Mountain unit, two Desert Bighorn Sheep hunts, one on the Zion, one on the Caparis West, a bison hunt on the Henry Mountains, and a mountain goat hunt on the Hyunas West. And I didn't go through those season dates, but I would like to point out those season dates are going to be very difficult hunt dates for those particular units and hunting with a bow. For example, on the desert sheep, I understand that those that November season is traditionally known as the rut on desert sheep. However, those units have Nevada and Arizona bloodlines. They actually rut early, usually in September, I believe. And so you're going to be hunting timbered up sheep. Those are going to be very difficult hunts. As I stated, really the driving component here to why we're recommending these new hunts is really to try to address point creep on once-in-a-lifetime species. We've never done this before, but I'm sure, as I've heard for several years, I'm sure all of you have, how difficult it is to draw a once-in-a-lifetime species tag. And if you're not up in that upper point tier, it literally could be impossible to draw one of those tags in your lifetime. So this is an attempt to try to provide some new and additional opportunities and to hopefully help address that issue. I want to point out a couple of things. As we create new hunts like this, I've heard concerns of again of affecting people that only want to hunt with a rifle and putting in for the existing rifle tags. But I want to point out, as you create a new hunt, it's going to draw some people that are putting in for those tags into this other application and could potentially make it easier to draw some of those other tags that are currently existing. As I mentioned, success rates are low on archery hunts has been there on any weapon hunts. I've done a little bit of research. Colorado has, I believe, 4 mountain goat archery hunts and 17 archery bighorn sheep hunts right now. I've looked at 13 years worth of data on them. The success rates, just for reference, on the mountain goat hunts is 65%, and on the bighorn sheep hunts, the success rate for archery is 33%. So that's what we're recommending here tonight. I would ask you to take this into serious consideration and please act on it, and we would love to have your support. Thank you.
Thank you, Brad. Yes, I just got a question. Would those tags come out of the existing pool? Is that what you're thinking they would do, or would you be asking for additional?
So we've had that, I think, conversation at every rack so far, and it's good. That's a good question and a good conversation. The sheep units that we picked, and I have to admit, I'm not a sheep expert. Troy Justison was very instrumental in helping to structure this from SFW, and he is a sheep guy. And maybe Jess can help me out a little bit, but on the sheep units that we picked, as I understand it from listening to Justin and Troy talk, we managed for, what's the 30 to 40% range we managed for?
So for bighorn sheep in particular, we go out and we count the rams and we classify them. And rams that are 6 years or older, we count those. And so if you have 10 of those on your survey, you issue between 30 and 40% of the class 3 and 4 rams that you saw. So if you saw 10 of these class 3 or class 4 rams, the recommendation that we'd bring forth as biologists would be 3 or 4 permits. Is that kind of what you were after, Ben?
Yeah, thank you for that. With that, our understanding is currently on these units, we're managing more on that 30% end versus the 40% end. So we're hopeful that we could, you know, add a tag or two to these new hunts without having to pull tags from the existing hunts. You know, that's maybe a bigger conversation for, you know, April, our April meeting. But ultimately, you know, with the lower success rates that we would expect, I would hope that in time, if not in the next year in time, that we could, you know, actually increase the amount of total number of tags given on these units because of that lower success rate. So
I've got two questions for
you. Yeah, go ahead.
How did the other racks respond?
Did
they favor?
So you guys, this is the fifth rack, right? You guys are the last rack to go. The northern region recommended or supported the Rocky Mountain bighorn sheep and the desert bighorn sheep hunts. They did not support the bison or the mountain goat. The central region and the southern region both supported the entire recommendation, and in both regions that was a unanimous vote. And then last night in the southeastern region, they did not support it. So.
Another question. Yep. If this was to pass, how would that affect that 7-day extension?
They're kind of two independent issues. I mean, what Ben's proposing is new hunts, a new hunt structure that could only have archery equipment, and this would be the back end of it.
So if this was to go through, it really wouldn't affect how you guys feel about the 7-day extension?
No, it wouldn't. We might have conversations about, you know, would the 7-day extension be added to these? Likely not, because they're already getting their once-in-a-lifetime hunt that would be archery only.
What the northern region did with that is they passed the 7-day extension for all the once-in-a-lifetime hunts except for these.
Yeah, the units that this would be coming out. So, for instance, if the Zion had an archery-only hunt, then rifle hunters that hunted the Zion that weren't successful wouldn't get that 7-day extension, because if they wanted to hunt with archery only, they could have applied for that permit. So
it really is in addition to. It's not in lieu of. It's in addition to.
It's in addition to. Yeah, it's just, they're independent of each other. Yeah. Is probably the best way to look at it.
Yeah. Yeah. They could coexist. Sure.
And if you draw this, all you get to do is hunt archery.
Correct.
That's it.
Yep.
Sticking your neck out.
Yep. Absolutely.
Another question?
Ben?
Yeah.
Did this come around to the RACs as an informational?
No, so the informational is what we brought in September, and that was the...
the board, right?
Well, yeah, to the RACs and to the Wildlife Board. CFO, Kevin Adamson, presented that out here in September.
That's right.
Yeah, so that was the informational that went to the RACs. So this recommendation that we've come up with here is a result of the feedback that we got as we took that informational.
The season dates, are they before the typical any weapon? Will they be before those?
It's a combination. So on the mountain goat, it is before the any weapon. On the buffalo, also before the any weapon. Whereas those buffalo hunts go, clear into the end of December and January. On the desert sheep, it would be after the any weapon season. And on the bighorn sheep, one of them would be before and one of them would be after. That's our current recommendation.
Yes, and how would this affect your management? If this passed, would it affect your management objectives at all? What's your opinion on that?
No, it wouldn't affect the management objectives per se. What it would do is it would lower success rates potentially is kind of the feel. Yeah, and so, in the past, if you look at some of these slides, mountain goats and bighorn sheep, their management plans say manage for a high success rate. Moose does as well, I think 80 to 90%. And so, that's something that would certainly have to be lowered, but we have room to lower it. You look at 96%, 94%. If we had some more unsuccessful hunters, we'd still be fine with those planning efforts. Really, from our perspective, the reason we didn't propose these standalone hunts is, from our view, it's just splitting the pie a different way. And right now, everybody, when it comes to draw odds, is on the same level, even playing field. And with this, if tags weren't added into addition because of lower success rates, we're not sure how it's going to work out. Ben's right, Colorado certainly has lower success rates. We have much higher success rates on our rifle hunts than they do for both mountain goats and bighorn sheep. But if no additional tags were issued, then potentially what could happen is archery hunters could have better draw odds at the expense of the any weapon hunters. And that's kind of the reason that we didn't bring this forward, is right now everyone's on a level playing field and we just wanted to kind of keep it that way. So,
so like the 9 mile Jack Creek, which is going to be very low numbers of tags, theoretically this could take 50% of the tags if there's only two tags out of the once in a lifetime rifle hunt, correct?
Yeah, if this passed, you could see a permit or two for the any weapon and a permit or two for the archery.
Theoretically, take 50% of the tags to this new hunt.
I think when you're dealing with hunts, if you go back and look at our bighorn sheep hunts, so many of these hunts, we have almost half of them have two permits or less. Out of the 25 hunts that we have currently, 12 of them have two permits or less. And so that was the other reason that we didn't bring forth this recommendation, is because what Yuba was asking for initially, to have hunts all by themselves with archery equipment, they already exist. Just apply for one of these hunts that has one or two permits and you can have it. It's a 51-day season or a 33-day season with you and one other person in the field, and that other person hunts 6 days. So, that's the reason. But again, like we were talking earlier, this is a social issue. This isn't, we're hunting males, and so biologically it wouldn't have any impacts to population. And management, we can manage many, many different ways. So,
and I'd like to address specifically on the Jack Creek unit. The reason we picked that unit is because of the difficult access. And again, with those seasons, it would be a very difficult hunt. And we designed it that way on purpose to try to help keep that success rate low on these hunts. And then the Box Elder Newfoundland Mountain hunt, that's the other Rocky Mountain Bighorn Sheep hunt, we picked that one because of the number of tags that do exist on now. There's, I don't know how many tags there's on that unit, but from what I understand, it's quite a few.
Seven or something like that.
Yeah.
Over 10 on the 9 mile, over 10 on the Zion, I think 13 on the Jack Creek and Gray Canyon in the past. So, the units that they picked, you could absorb a tag or two and not have to have it split 50-50 because it's only two or three permits.
Yeah. So. Any other questions for me?
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, Patty,
Well, our situation's a little different than what we've been hearing so far. You're asking for the RAC committee's help in correcting a mistake that was made 20 years ago. When they formed the Diamond Mountain limited entry hunt area, as they drew up the descriptions, if you look down on the second set of each of those, you'll see that the part we want to address is where it says that the line comes down the U.S. Forest Service boundary to the BLM boundary on the Diamond Mountain Rim. Geographically, that doesn't fit. The BLM boundary is well below the rim of Diamond, about 4/5 of a mile, according to Google Earth. So, consequently, when they discovered this, and Mitch White may well have been in that meeting, but as they discussed that 20 years ago, the division and the Landowners Association, those that set up the limited entry unit, decided that the easiest, most definable line was the rim of Diamond, which is what they intended, and that's what kind of what it says here. And they defined it as the Brush Creek drainage, and that's what it's meant for 20 years. We kind of left our officers and the public in a little bit of limbo there because, you know, it's not exactly that way geographically. So the issue is, how do you like that? So I guess the issue is that this year they decided to enforce that differently, which is fine, but there again, it doesn't match what our description says, but in an effort to do so, they decided to enforce that differently. And so I guess what I'm asking and what our proposal is, talk with the Landowners Association, I think we'll hear from them in a minute, but we'd like the line that's defined and easy to define for the public and the law officers. It's not fair to ask the officers to interpret the law, that's a judge's job. So what we're proposing is that we strike those four words, BLM boundary, and then add in parentheses Brush Creek drainage. So the new description would read down the Forest Service line boundary to the Diamond Mountain Rim Brush Creek drainage, then southeast along this rim to the Jones's Hole Road. Is there any questions? Or so basically, I guess it's a little bit of a description change, but we're looking to make the description fit how it's been enforced the last 20 years since it's been put in place.
I think I know the area that he's talking about pretty well, and it is a concern because we are enforcing it different this year than we have in the past, and it's not the real, I guess, everybody that's hunted there in the past might go back there again and think it's still the way it was. I don't have any comment, but I would like to know if anybody else is here to this subject when we're done, please let us know so that we get all these at one time, okay?
How's it being enforced different?
Mitch, you're probably fairly familiar with that. Where they're talking is right there by Marvin Springs, the old cow cabin draw. And in the past, it's been enforced as the Rim of Diamond, the Brush Creek drainage, exactly.
And this year, they fell off to the BLM boundary.
They fell off below this. They go to the BLM boundary and then about another half a mile to that last ridge before you go over the edge. We called it, that ridge, as far as I know, has no name. And I pushed cattle over that ridge over 50 years ago, so I've been there a lot, but we called it Hog Hollow, that threw the cattlemen's right away. And what they proposed was to, well, no, I guess what they did this year anyway is said that would be the rim and they'd come northeast. That comes northeast up, that ridge runs northeast, so they'd run northeast up to the Diamond Mountain Rim.
I can see where they'd run into conflict. If I was out there and it was said the boundary and the BLM boundary, you could have a good argument.
Well, we need to change the description one way or the other because this description doesn't really fit what we have there either, because you hit the BLM boundary and you go south about a quarter of a mile and then you go northeast along the ridge. But I guess the big thing is this, you know, for 20 years the officers felt like it was this way and now they've changed, that's fine, but what about 5 years from now when we have new officers there, people move on? I think the public and the officers deserve a finite line that's easily defined, easy for the public to define, easy for the law enforcement to define.
Well, it's always been a mindset that it was the ram, and you're just going back to what it always was.
Exactly.
You've got a good point. There's got to be a definite boundary. Just there always be issues and questions and so on.
Well, they explained
it to me when I was over there one day was which way the water ran. The run towards Brush Creek, that was not on Diamond Mountain entry level, and if it went the other way, it was. So.
That was the way the division has defined it for 20 years, too. So.
It is a troublemaker, old Randy.
I don't know if there was a troublemaker.
Does anybody want to speak to the subject before we jump off of it? All right.
We'll be doing boundaries in this.
Dex, do you have a map of this so that these guys can understand exactly what it is?
Boundary issue part of this.
Yes.
No, it's not in. Well, the boundary description is within the document. It's not being brought forward as a change. It's a recommendation from the public.
But it is part of this discussion.
Yeah, it's part of this agenda.
This would be the appropriate agenda item.
Yeah, correct. Okay. Yes. Thanks, Dex.
Yeah. So, Amy put together a map for us. You can see the boundary is coming down the Forest Service, line from the north. You're coming south, and the black line is kind of what was enforced basically as the old boundary, or close to that. And then this red line, based on the way the boundary description reads, it says you follow the Forest Service boundary to the BLM boundary and then follow the rim around. That's probably not technically the rim as far as drainage is concerned, but if you do follow until you hit the BLM boundary, then there's an issue there. And so you got kind of that little triangle there. It's owned by the phosphate mine. Owns the majority of it, and then Mr. Batty, I think, has a little corner of his piece that would be in there too. But yeah, we're talking about this little corner right here. So, and I don't know if there's anyone here from the phosphate mine tonight, but you know, it would probably be fair to get input from those guys before we went ahead and recommended making some kind of change here. But you know, we feel the same as Mr. Batty. We want a boundary that's enforceable, that's clear, that's not going to be confusing to folks. But at the same time, we don't want to make a change that has a lot of implications that we haven't had time to think through, or you know, and we don't want to pull the rug out from you. We don't want to pull the rug out from underneath the phosphate mine. We just want to figure out something that works and that's enforceable, and that makes sense.
Would you agree that the change was made this year, though?
So
20 years it was the other way.
Yeah. So we had other issues about the Diamond Rim boundary this year that came up during the archery deer hunt on the southern corner here. We'll show you here down where the road comes up. This little triangle right here, there were people that were saying the road was the boundary, but the way the boundary description reads, it says you follow the rim until it intersects with the road. So we had people trying to hunt this area as a general season area where
black line
mean. Well, in boundary descriptions, when it says
close,
touches the road, I mean, or to the road, it means until it intersects the road. It doesn't mean until it comes really close. Two parallel lines can't touch, if you remember from geometry back in the day.
We didn't
change it, and that's been enforced consistently there for a long time. So, but we do have people who have hunted it for a long time, you know, that hunted it as if it were general season. So what we wanted to do when that issue came up is said, let's go back to the written boundary description. That's what's legally binding. That's what we need to follow. Let's make sure we're following that correctly. And that's how this issue came up. We said, okay, if we're going to follow the Forest Service boundary to the BLM boundary to the rim, and then follow the rim until it intersects and crosses the road, then this red line would be what we would do according to the way it's worded in the boundary description.
Can I ask a quick question?
I'm not the rack chair.
So. Can I ask a quick question?
Yes.
Name.
So,
name.
Oh, Steve Batty.
Step up the mic and ask a question if you would.
So,
The red line is what has been enforced this year so far. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Is there any way that as a sportsman I can find GPS coordinates or a GPS map to be able to hunt that line? Or I guess we're saying that that's the rim. So how is the rim defined along that line by a certain grade or by? Because it's clearly not drainage. How is it defined? I'm sorry, that's a better question.
Yeah. So, no, along a lot of this, some of it's going to be drainage, some of it isn't. It's going to be probably just the grade. And, we went through and looked at it. You know, there's portions of this that are probably going to drain into Brush Creek, right down here in this bottom triangle. This is going to drain into Brush Creek. And, you know, the edge of the rim, there's a little bit of, you know, you might not be able to draw a line with the pencil on the ground. But it's a boundary that's worked relatively well for a long time, except for this year in the two little triangles on the ends. So.
Can I ask you a question? What is that BLM? Is it all fancy? Red line. Is it fancy? No. So you haven't got really an established boundary. What's the easiest for you to police? The
rim or the
red line? Depends
on how you're looking at it.
That's why I'm asking you.
The easiest thing to be enforced, you've had a lot of discussions, would be the way it's described now. It would be that red line. This has always been enforced like this. The only spot that there's a question is up here. You have hills here, but there's not a rim there. This area right here is higher than this, so it does drain that way. But there's not a distinct rim here. A rim would be, when you're on the ground and you're looking at it, it looks like a tabletop. It's flat, and then it drops off.
So
and
that's from the red line. Now, is that corner, that's private ground, isn't it?
The reason we would prefer the red line is because of the amount of animals that bunch up on the rim, specifically deer, and a road going through that. It'd be a major cause for violations. Most of our violations are good people that are kind of tempted, and that would be a big temptation.
So, could I ask Randy a question, Mr. Chair? Has there been a problem in the last 20 years and you have a significant problem on that?
We patrol it a lot. The landowners, Dave Bart, when he owned what Simplot owns now, he felt like there was major concerns. Simplot feels like there's major concerns up to the point where they were going to try to hire the sheriff's department for $30 an hour to patrol 24/7 during the general season months. There's a lot of traffic there and a lot of deer. Like I said, most of our violations, most of the hunters that violate with us aren't bad, evil people. You know, they're tempted, they make mistakes, and that would be leading to a lot of those mistakes.
So won't there still be the same amount of traffic and the same amount of deer?
But having the border here creates a buffer where basically if it was changed to the road, it would become unlawful taking while trespassing and a minimal fine, no loss of your hunting privileges, which would make it much more tempting to people. With this being limited entry, it's wanting destruction. You lose your hunting privileges, possibly restitution amounts go way up. If you kill a deer big enough.
I need to clarify one thing. We're not after, we wasn't proposing that they make the road boundary. Just like it's been the last 20 years to brush strip drainage.
Can I have another second?
Can I finish?
Oh, let's go ahead.
That corner up there, isn't that private ground?
It is.
Yeah. So if that's pulled out, then it kind of has that would come out
of
the total
acreage. So, Amy, right now, this corner right here, this piece we're talking about, this right now, this is considered inside the Diamond Mountain Limited Entry Unique, and this acreage is calculated when is taken into account when Diamond Mountain receives their limited entry permits.
And how many
you know, Amy? 700 something, sounds like.
So the Diamond Mountain, how the Diamond Mountain, one of the Diamond Mountain landowners has standard?
Right now, SF Phosphate
does participate in the private and the landowner tags. SF Phosphate receives, I think, over the 10-year period on the deer, I think they receive two tags based on the acreage. So it's around 700 acres. But it's, so SF Phosphate, are they, have they been contacted at all? Have they weighed in on this issue at all?
I'm sorry, what's your name?
John McCackney.
Sorry. We haven't talked to the phosphate because we weren't proposing a change, but and that's one of the things, I guess, from the division standpoint, we want to find a boundary that works well, but there's a lot of implications anytime you change a boundary. I mean, it might affect Diamond Mountain Landowners Association, and it's going to affect phosphate, Mr. Batty, and if we could get all those people together and everyone feels good about it and we get our law enforcement officers there, and we could find a boundary that works well, that's enforceable, and everyone who's going to be potentially affected by that boundary feels good about it. I don't think we're opposed to making a change, but I hate to make a change. And like I said, it didn't come to our attention. This is an issue until, you know, into the middle of the hunting season. And we make the recommendations for our hunt boundaries and season dates way back in September, and just didn't have time to call everyone and get together and come up with a new boundary.
One last question. If I made a proposal to table this tonight, would you guys entertain the idea of having a meeting and discussing this and the landowners?
I'd be happy to do that. It might mean that we wouldn't be able to make a change until the 2018 hunting season, though, because right now we're setting the dates, you know, I mean, the boundaries for 2017 hunting season. I think that sounds great. I would actually like to have an opportunity to sit down with everyone who'd be affected and come up with something that's going to work and work well, but I just... our timeline is so tight, I don't know that we'd have time to do something. I guess we could try to do something before the board meeting. Board meeting is December 9th.
Let me ask what's your feelings on it? Would you like to try to do something tonight or have a special meeting?
We can have a meeting anytime they'd like to have a meeting. Originally the boundary, I've been working well for 20 years.
Okay, you know, let me just throw this out there. You guys tell me what you think. We'll try to get a meeting put together between now and December 9th with Mr. Batty, with Simplot Phosphate, and with Diamond Mountain Landowners Association representation, and see if we can come up with something. And then we'll have our biologist and law enforcement officer there, and we could try to come up with something before the board meeting on the 9th.
Yeah. Dax?
I don't want to beat a dead horse, but this boundary doesn't match our description either, so we need to clarify the description one way or the other.
Well, you're talking a lot to drainage. I think you could interpret it more than one way. Whether you're talking drainage or whether you're talking rim, if you define rim as a geological feature, you know, it's the rim of a ridge, you know, you could interpret it that that's the rim we're talking about. If you're talking drainage, then you're right. I think there's more than one way. Justin, you had a clarification?
Yeah, just real quick. If we were to do something on the division's timeline, we'd probably need that recommendation by about December 5th or 6th. To come to the 9th and the agenda's already put together, and
we'll have a turkey while we meet. It'll be all right.
That would be great. So,
the boundary we've got now, this boundary would need to read to the BLM boundary south along this boundary to the rim, I guess, if you want to call that the rim or the ridge, and then northeast along this ridge to the Diamond Mountain rim, and then southeast along the Diamond Mountain.
Yeah.
The ridge runs northeast.
It's just, you know, geographically looking at it, this looks more like a rim than this looks like a rim when you're out there on the ground. There's room for improvement.
There's a lot of people that have been there for years and years, I think, would disagree with this. So the rim's always been for everybody around there. I guess what my proposal was is we really need to make the description match the boundary, whichever boundary we go with. Because it's not fair to anybody when it doesn't.
Also, a stupid question, why not go with the rim? I mean, that is a designated place. What would happen if we went with the road? How is that going to, obviously it's going to...
You put out private ground, it's into the calculations on permits on that, not in effect.
Right, but that corner that's always been, patrolled as if it was the general public, but you pull out that other smaller stuff down along the road too, I guess, is that right?
It just, you know, we talked about it a little bit. That is an area where we have a lot of deer that concentrate. There's a lot of people, a lot of traffic driving through there. if the boundary was the road instead of the rim, we anticipate we're going to have more people shooting deer that shouldn't be shooting deer on, you know, near the road. It's a little harder, you know, and that's we're speculating, but that's what, based on, you know, our law enforcement guys' experience, they anticipate they would likely see. Another thing to take into consideration is this portion of the Diamond Mountain Limited Entry Unit typically has a lower buck-to-doe ratio than other portions of the Diamond Mountain Limited Entry Deer Unit. So when you take that into account, you know, it might affect the buck-to-doe ratio for Diamond Mountain. And there's anytime you change a boundary, there's a lot of different factors, and it's good to have the time to sit down and really think them through and make sure that everyone that could potentially be affected has an opportunity to understand those and weigh in on them.
But you're thinking that we can have a meeting with all the players before the Wildlife Board meeting?
I think we could figure something out.
Isn't that December 1st?
They changed it to the 9th, is my understanding.
It's the 9th.
Oh, it's the 9th.
Okay. So, and Justin indicated that he would have to have the recommendations by the 5th.
So, I mean, we're going to have to meet first part of next week or the first part of the week after.
All right, we got one more input on this topic?
Yes.
Thanks, Dax.
I'm Bill Batty.
Bill
Batty. I have a question and a comment. Well, this has been defined differently for the last 20 years. You know, when Mr. Searle owned the ground and Mr. Barton owned a lot of that ground, would this even be an issue if Mr. Barton hadn't have sold his property to SF, to the phosphate plant, because Mr. Barton used much of that ground there to let general season hunters hunt? And it seems strange to me that that's been going on for all these years. And then once he sells his property, it's like, well, that's not going to affect very many people now. Would it be an issue if that property hadn't been sold and hunters were still hunting that and it was actually part of their livelihood?
But there's always stuff that brings up issues. You know, as things change, that's why we're here. There's always issues that come up, things change.
And it just seems coincidental to me that was open for all these years, and then the day of another water hunt, we get notification that we're not able to hunt. And it seems coincidental that is this not the first year that Mr. Barton has not been able to have his hunters in there hunting? I'm just wondering if it's because it's been a change of land ownership where it's being looked at, well, it's not going to affect near as many people now, and so let's go ahead and change it. So I guess that's something we need to think about, maybe.
I can speak to that. I've been here in the region 10 years. This has never been an issue until this year. It's purely coincidence.
What is?
That this issue came up this year, and it was because of the guys hunting on that south little corner right there. That's the only reason we looked at the boundary and realized there was an inconsistency. It didn't have anything to do with landowners
change in hand.
Thank you. All right,
let's keep going. Randy Quayle.
I'm just making sure this is up for it. Thank you again, Randy Quayle, Timpanogos Archery. Timpanogos Archery is in agreement with both the DWR's recommendation for the bucks, bulls, and once-in-a-lifetime recommendation, and also with the Utah Bowmen's Association on the bucks, bulls recommendation, once-in-a-lifetime recommendation for some added archery-only once-in-a-lifetime hunts. Thank you.
Thank you. Kyle Young. While he's coming up, anybody else wants to address this? Please fill out a comment card.
Kyle Young, resident of Utah, again. My main concern is proposal of these are ideas from a concerned sportsman, Utah taxpayer. an affiliated rancher that's been affiliated with the Buck Cliffs with my family for the last 70 years. My one big concern is our Utah Division of Wildlife Resources receives millions of dollars to help manage and support the management of hunting and fishing in Utah. Federal monies also help support these issues. Back to a Buck Cliff management. We've got a management unit that has had limited acre units. For the record itself, right out of your own proclamation, Utah had 27 limited acre units in Utah. Out of these 27 limited acre units, they conducted a spike bull tag that is offered over the counter. You take 80,000 spike bull tags that's issued every year, divide that in the 27 units, that is 3,375 permit per unit. You take that amount of pressure in these limited acre units was designed for quality hunting on bull or buck units. The other issue I have is we got kind of a predator problem. When I go up in that buck cliff and I see more bear than I do deer in the primitive unit itself, that's a concern to me. I also see cow elk, mature cow elk. For an example, 37 head of cow elk, seen cat, or six calf elk on them cows. It's not just this year, it's been going on and on and on. And the other thing is, when the Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation bought out some of these real estate ranchers, I do not see no program issuing money to support the wild horse problem. We've got a wild horse problem that is scattered in that Buckcliff Robus area from the Colorado line, clear to the west side, cleared north to the White River Bridge. Then wild horses are devastating our country. It's designed for wildlife management. Not knocking the program for statistics. This is a rifle hunt of the elk as well as the deer that conducted here in 2016. Right there at the top of Diamond Ridge, that little teeny pond right there in the end of that wilderness area, there's 28 head of wild horses sitting on that little pond. You get down in the primitive area, there's several little bands scattered throughout that. You go down Willow Creek all the way, clear out south almost to the White River Bridge. We got horse problems. I do not see or do not hear no funding money supporting wild horse management program. I don't know what the BLM has, but I don't know if it's a concern to them. It is to me to try to reduce these numbers. We also got buffalo inside that primitive area. Might belong to the tribal side, might belong to our state. That primitive area was designed for deer and elk. That buffalo that was originally set aside, Rock Springs Mesa, Cherry Mesa, introduced, we got buffalo from geokinetics clear to the head of that drainage of Willow Creek. Numbers were staggering that I've never seen before just in the last 5 years. Sure, there's feed clear up to the knee. They're going to find it. They're going to stay there. The wild horses are tearing that range completely apart. And I don't know how they can forage on a management program and them horses live there 24 hours on the clock. And that's my opinion. Thank you.
Thank you, Cal. Shannon, is there anything we can do about the wild horses? Or Justin, is there anything we can do about the wild horses?
I'm just glad we're on a last name basis. That makes me feel good. One day we're going to get along better, and we'll be on a first name basis. And that'll help. For the horse issue, I'll talk statewide, and then if they want to talk specifically to the Buck Cliffs, I extend that invitation. But statewide, the purpose of including horses in these elk management plans on the last agenda item that was passed was to be able to provide support. I think the BLM and the Forest Service are multiple use agencies, and so they have various stakeholders that are putting pressure. And so the role that we wanted to play, because we don't have management authority over horses, is to help provide political and support and cover and those types of social things that these federal agencies need. And so that's the role that we were looking to play with that. We certainly don't have a role in administering a program that would overstep our bounds. That's really in their jurisdiction. But if we can help in any way, that's the role we'd like to play. Anything specific to the Book Cliffs guys that you'd want to add?
We've always supported, Clint Sampson. We've always supported wild horse gatherers in the Book Cliffs, whether that's supporting them with our law enforcement guys, any kind of efforts we can do that way. We encourage them with our coordination meetings that we have annually with the BLM, and we share our concerns as well. I think I read the other day that wild horses are putting out 80 pounds of dry manure a day, wet manure a day. And, it's not that dry out there. Wild horses are definitely a concern to us out there. We did have some luck this last year. Bert Lambert was able to lay claim to, I think, around 100 around the Sea Ridge area, Winter Ridge area, right there. And so we were able to get some off. I think the last BLM gather we did was probably six years ago. Maybe BLM can back me up on that. But
I think it was about four.
4 years ago, yeah, somewhere around there. And we were able to remove, a little over 100 head just in a day and a half worth of work. And they are a touchy subject when it comes to public support, but we definitely support any kind of removal of those horses to help spread it out. I know the Roldis area with the bison, I've taken several trips in there with Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation members, and they seem to be supportive of it. The increased opportunity for wildlife. We do feel stewards of that place. I know personally, I try to spend as much time in there as my wife will let me. We do try to consider ourselves stewards of that area, and I believe with the management, and I can go back to photo records back in the early 80s to show the amount of vegetative change for the positive with grazing management and just certain things that we've done habitat-wise to try and increase the value of that property. And, like you saw when you rolled through. I mean, there's grass taller than horse in some places, and the bison are doing their thing in there, and so we try to consider ourselves, stewards of that area.
Mr. Chair, can I make one more clarification? There was a comment made earlier that we have 80,000 spike tags in the state. If I gave that impression, I apologize. We have 15,000. Spike tags in the state, so I just wanted to clarify that was the case. So,
thank you. If you don't mind, the statistics on the state of Utah post these information on web.
Sure.
And I got documents stating differently.
We have 80,000 elk in the state, but we issue 15,000 spike permits.
But that's the statistics when they started this spike tag over the counter to sell tags. If you issue even 15,000. In these units of 27 units in the state of Utah, you keep doing that year after year after year. These young bulls are killed out of there. There is nothing for a herd-sized bull. I had seen the numbers drop dramatically, especially in the last 4 years, of the quality of mature bulls offered to the sportsmen in this Utah, which to me is a waste of tax dollars for what the program set aside to build up to this unit, not same trophy unit. Good quality hunting units.
Yeah.
Utah has got some major issues. The Book Cliffs is the number one priority concern in the whole state of Utah in controversy right now. Yes, we got oil and gas industry. We also got the resources here. Utah receives in sales, licenses, fees, supporting anything all on the state tax level of $2.9 billion a year. In revenue from the sale of every item which Utah receives from the federal funds supporting match and part of that. Statistics, a match on the 6% sales tax of all items affiliated with hunt and such. Here's a document in my hand statement where you go on web page and find that information yourself.
Sure. It's called the Pittman Robinson tax. Yeah, and it's a federal tax on ammo, camo,
number two, it's interesting.
Yeah, sure.
Okay, thank you. Sean Fetcher.
Mine is just for the CWM unit on number 9.
Oh, okay. We'll fix that. Let's see, Brian Snow.
Brian Snow. I want to address the extended archery boundary that goes from Brush Creek down to Island Park Road over to the BLM. And want to propose changing that back to the original when it first came out, back over to the park, all the way along Island Park Road over to the park. All it is taking in a section of BLM land. That way, public can actually access the other side of Brush Creek, but not north, which would interfere with deer coming down from Diamond, but that actually they'd be able to access the deer versus just on the west side of Brush Creek. South of the Island Park Road, they'd also be able to access this on the east side, over to the Green River.
Okay.
Which, to the public, it kind of caters only to the landowner along the creek. And I get it. I grew up as a landowner too, but I also like to help the public also. But I just want to see if they could propose a change.
Okay. Max, you want to address that for us?
Yeah, the primary intent of our extended archery hunt in the Uinta Basin is to address resident deer and elk that have impacts potentially on agricultural operations. So if you look at our boundary, it includes very little public land, and that's true. And I talk to frustrated sportsmen, you know, periodically that say, hey, there's hardly any public land inside this extended archery boundary. I tell them, you're correct, and that's intentional. It's not designed as a recreational opportunity. We're not trying to harvest deer that might be migrating out of our higher elevations and public lands. It's intended as a tool for landowners to try to address resident animals, or animals that are primarily residents that live in lower elevation agricultural areas. It was designed initially as a management tool. It's morphed and turned into more of a recreational opportunity, and I understand there's more demand from archers that want to be able to, you know, have more places to hunt on public land there. But that's the background, and that's why we have the boundary the way it is. A few years ago, they changed the boundary to just be Brush Creek, and then we had a lot of landowners in Brush Creek area that complained that they could only hunt half of their field because the creek went through the middle of their field. So we changed the boundary back to follow the BLM boundary so that all those private lands would be included in the extended archery hunt. At the same time, we're trying to be careful and not harvest, you know, Diamond Mountain bucks or, you know, bucks that are coming down off the mountain and migrating down into lower elevations that time of year. But that's kind of the background behind, you know, why it is the way it is. So.
Okay, thank you. Yep.
So my proposal is to change it back to the original boundary, which is the Diamond Mountain, or is the Island Park Road, which won't affect the deer that are coming down in Donkey Flat. Because Donkey Flat is where all the deer come off of Diamond. The ones down below that are on below Island Park Road, majority are already there. And now, I get it, you're catering to...
You're talking like McCoy Flat and the stuff there below the monument?
The stuff that's between... You got Island Park Road, that you come in where Upward lives, straight across over to the park. That's where it originally was. Not where it was up before up at Donkey Flat, up above. No. Because I get it. That is a premier unit, and I wouldn't want to take out anything away from a premier unit. So that's my proposal.
Handy
is there any chance we could get a map on that one?
No.
Any chance we can get a map on that?
On what?
Sorry. On that
area we just talked about.
I'm not sure that they have
a map on the extended archery boundary.
Pull up online.
Yeah, I can do that.
Is that your password?
Nope.
You want to say it in the microphone?
Stop it. Give me 1 second, guys.
You already told Ethan, okay?
Yeah, but I have to turn it online. Oh my gosh. Pandora.
I'm glad it's not my phone. That's super embarrassing.
Shut up, Justin. Not nice.
Can I make a comment while we're putting that up there? It appears to me that, with the exception of the overlapping hunt issue, most of the comment, a lot of the comments tonight are addressing quality of animals, and that's an issue for in the spring when we do hunt numbers. Not trying to put the issue off, it's a valid issue, but we take the fall hunt data where it has age class of the bulls harvested, and so a lot of that's not going to be able to be addressed in this, and I just want the public to understand that. In the spring, we decide how many tags to issue on the booklets specifically. And we have the fall data of the age class. So if it doesn't get addressed, which is not in here, a lot of that quality issue is not going to get addressed. But in the spring, when we issue permits, that's how you manage age class.
Thank you.
So do you want the hunt boundary description or do you want the map?
Map.
Okay. All right. Where to from here? Pardon my ignorance. I'm not sure where you want me.
You just leave that the way it is.
Is that good?
Upper right corner.
Yeah,
right
in
there.
Yeah. More than that? One more? Two more?
Yeah, go in a little more. It's not that area. It's that area right there. Mm-hmm. Yep. So here's Highland Park Road. They're saying include, it's not the Coy Flat McFarley Flat, but it's stuff south of Highland Park Road.
So is that public or private?
That's public, most of BLM.
So that really wouldn't fit into the Coy Flat.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, based on how we've drawn the extended archery
boundary. It used to be, when it first came out, it was part of the extended hunt.
Then we had a time where we got direction from the RAC that they did not want us to kill migratory mountain deer, on the extended archery hunt. So and that was 4 or 5 years ago. And we had issues like the Donkey Flat area. We had issues with buffers around rivers, you know, or streams, or we had like a 1 mile buffer, and that caused a lot of issues for law enforcement. We tried to simplify and change the boundary, and that's why it is the way it is. What is that gray one called now?
The dark one.
It comes from the Island Park Road, then it comes down Brush Creek until it hits the private land, then or the BLM. Then it follows, this is the BLM boundary.
It's all private.
Private. So this is all private inside here, and this is all BLM.
But they're trying to manage the deer off there. You want to push them back north of the Island Park Road.
Brian, you're talking about bringing it along here. Point out exactly what you're proposing.
So it comes right down here, and then it breaks off on the Island Park Road, and comes right back over to the park.
That's it.
So they could actually come over here and go to the park line here if they want to shoot. But it's a road, and it's definitive, and versus falling by the property owner. But it used to be all the way over the park. The road was boundary. And it was definitive.
And Dax, what would that
do? I don't remember that being the boundary. Maybe someone else does. Randy, how long have we been here in the region?
Well, I don't remember being the boundary.
It was the boundary.
So how long ago?
It's probably been off. When you guys started the extended hunt, it was it. It was the boundary.
That was before I got
it. We had a 1 mile buffer along Brush Creek at one time. Mm-hmm. But that caused issues because then you got some little chunks of BLM and private where, I don't know. Our intent with the hunt has been to try to use it as a tool to address depredation issues on private lands. Adding this in would potentially create a recreational opportunity, but I don't know that it would help us anymore with what we're initially set out to do with the hunt. So
and Dinosaur Monument, you know, there's going to be maybe some important issues there. I don't know. It could potentially create some additional recreation opportunity, but that hasn't been our intent. Try to provide a tool to private landowners to address harvest gear that are on their private land.
This will allow the public to actually help the farmer also reduce their on-site.
Thank you. Any other comments on this one? Prefer to hold your peace.
Mr. Rock Chair, can I plug what I'm up there right now? This is the Utah Hunt Planner. If you guys haven't seen it, it's incredible. You can pull up information on every big game hunt in the state. That's it. I'm done. I'll shut up.
How did you get there? Tell us how you got there.
Just on our website, wildlife.utah.gov, and there's just Utah Hunt Planners under the map. So. Just right here under the hunt boundary.
Yep.
You got right here the Utah Hunt Planner. So it's incredible. Any big game hunt information you want, it's all there. So
thank you. Yeah. Thank you.
That's shameless, I know.
All right. Let's go to we're at the end of the discussion by the rack.
Three issues.
Yeah, I think it looks to me like we've got one, two, three, four, maybe five issues. We've got the Utah Bowman's one that has the additional hunts. We've got the 7-day extension, which I guess is part of the proposal, unless we don't want it to be. Then we've got the Diamond Mountain Boundary that Mr. Batty proposed. We've got the wild horse issue, if there's anything we could possibly do on that.
That's addressed in there also that they will support.
Yep, there's not an open season on it.
We need to make this game.
We can't make the season
on it. It's a social
issue.
And then we've got the disextended archery boundary that Mr. Snow just suggested. So let's take one at a time, let's take this Utah Bowman Association, which is the Rocky Mountain Bighorn Sheep, or Desert Bighorn Sheep Bison, and Mountain Goat additional hunts.
What are you discussing on that one?
I like the fact of it because I think it helps with point creep. So as somebody who doesn't shoot with an a bow, I put in for the mountain goat. If a guy wants to go try to take a mountain goat before I try to go shoot him with the rifle, I think more power to him. So it helps me. Hopefully, if he takes the archery tag, maybe I'm the guy that draws that tag with a rifle later on. So, selfish maybe, but I think if the success ratio supports what it supports, I think if a guy wants to go after something with a bow for six additional tags, that helps probably exponentially. I don't know the numbers, how they add up. Over time for point creep, I think it's a great idea because we're all trying to get opportunities to hunt. So,
is that a true statement, Justin, that it would be six additional tags, or it would?
Yeah,
it could actually get into the rifle.
It's got to come.
Yeah, we don't know. That's the challenge right now. Is if we had one archery permit and a heavy majority of the hunters wanted to apply for that, then it would hurt point creep for those archery hunters, but it would help point creep for the other hunters. With most of our big game hunts, when it comes to archery, those have the best draw odds. So generally, it's fewer hunters that are going to that. So it's really all predicated on how many permits are issued, and then how many people apply. And we can only learn that by looking backwards. It's really hard to project on a new hunt like this.
So like I said, I'm selfish. I got 11 deer points, 12 elk points, and 10 mountain goat points. So That's where I'm at. So if I have to hunt, I have to choose somewhere else to hunt. So that's me.
Okay. Other discussion?
I think they ought to, we ought to do one or the other and not both. And I prefer the week-long extended on all the seasons because it's simple. And it doesn't draw a pull tag. I'm more concerned, I'm not concerned about goats and bison where we have a lot of tags. But on sheep, I'm very concerned that it will pull tags out and actually make the draw tougher, just the opposite of what Joe described. If there's only two tags in a unit and you lose half of them to the archery, the rifle hunters are all competing for the final tag.
I kind of feel the same way as Brett.
I'm on board too. What would you want to do,
Mr. Chairman? I don't know about the fire. You got that stuck in my throat, about to die. And I got water right here too, so. Well, any other discussion on this proposal by the Utah Bowman Association? I'll entertain a motion.
On the one issue.
Yeah, I'll make a motion that we accept this 7-day extension on the once in a lifetime hunts as the division's proposal tonight.
Which is part of the proposal.
Correct, yeah.
Do I have a second on that? That was the one we're going after, but I guess we'll start with that one first. So Ben made the proposal and Melissa seconded it. All in favor? Let's see, Tim, are you in favor? So it's unanimous. Okay, let's talk about the proposal that the UVA made on six new hunts. Do we have a proposal or a motion on that one?
How did the other RACs vote again?
The northern region voted, they supported in favor of the desert sheep and the Rocky Mountain bighorn sheep. They opposed the mountain goat and the bison. The central RAC supported it all, the southern region supported it all, and the southeastern region did not support the recommendation.
Thank you, Ben.
Are we discussing that, Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
I support Brad. I think I'm of the opinion that I support one or the other, and I support the 7-day extension. That's my opinion.
Okay. Other discussion? Well, I entertain a motion. Does anybody want to make a motion on this one? I guess it's going to die on the vine. We're not going to support it evidently. All right, the next one I've got, the next thing we talked about was this one that Mr. Batty made on the Diamond Mountain boundary change on the west side of it.
Mr. Chairman, yes. As a Diamond Mountain land owner and I've been involved in these boundary issues, I would propose that we meet with DAX and the Diamond Mountain landowners the first next week, and there's a lot to this. It needs to be resolved.
Okay, will you make that a motion?
Yes, that could be a motion.
All right, Mitch made that motion. Did you get it?
We would support the decision that comes out of that, the DWR decision that comes out of that meeting.
And the whatever decision made that the board would support. That's the motion I made.
Okay, second?
I'll second it.
All right, Dave second it. All in favor? And it's unanimous. Thank you. All right. The wild horse issues. Is there anything we can do on that one?
You can get the public to change Congress's mind on what the Wild Horse Act is.
I say we appoint a representative to go talk to Mr. Trump.
I'll make a motion.
All right. Boyd, do you have anything to say on that one?
Well, I was just going to say, you know, we're not in favor of wild horses either in there, at least past the point of not managing to management objective, and that's been a concern of ours, and we've tried to look at it and address it many times, and it's out of our control as a state agency. Certainly we support management of wild horses in some areas. We've given money to or we were an intermediate of getting money to the tribe when they did some work on the South Slope, and we would allow them access to certain areas if it would help them as well. And I think that the tribe has done some work on wild horses, and Tim may address that, but at this point, as a state agency, our hands are tied. But I think Tim has something.
Yeah, the way we go about it is we're a nation within a nation, and we have a kind of a, I could say, a hall pass, and we do have a wild horse buyer that will come in and pick them up, but we also have that same problem you guys have, so, you know, it would have to be a joint effort to, you know, give us a hall pass to, and maybe some of your boys could, push him across.
I like his thoughts. Yeah, I guess there's a chance this administration might change the federal, you know, the rules of Congress. They might want to change something. Who knows? But
I know BLM, they told us that they've got so many wild horses in Nevada. That's in Montreal. And they can't do anything.
Please, can we?
We rounded up three, maybe 400 head of cows, and I think like 300 head of horses. And we had a horse buyer and a cattle buyer come in and buy them all.
Okay, sounds like you might have a little bit easier way to.
It's pretty costly.
All right, that's it. Let's talk. The last one we've got here is the extended archery boundary that Mr. Smith proposed. Let's discuss that one. Anybody have any discussion on that?
Well, I'll give my opinion on it. I've been on these extended. I've got property that's been in it, been out of it. It's always been private property. And I'm not against what you're saying, but tonight, I just don't think we're going to get enough input and what you need and the information you need to really make it justified, you know, to vote on it. So I don't want to discourage you from not pursuing it, but you just probably won't get enough information tonight. Because I know when I've been involved in it, it takes a few meetings and input from different landowners and sportsmen to make a change. So, you know, I don't want to discourage you, but I just don't think, as a board, we've got the information we need to do it tonight.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, I made a comment on that. And we've heard, social things change, they drive, how we manage things. And maybe that's something the division needs to look at. The intent of the hunt was like Dak said, it was really intended to control some depredation issues on private land, on agricultural lands. But that's not really what it has turned into. It's turned into more of a, kind of a trophy hunt, socially. And so maybe that's something that, that's what I'm hearing here is right. Maybe that's something the division needs to kind of consider in the future.
Well, let me
speak as a landowner.
Sure.
The reason we get this is we get a little depredation from these animals. And we've got recourse on depredation. And our recourse, in the last few years, the Fish and Game's worked with this, and we've taken something that's been just destructive into resource. And it's worked really good. And it's because we've got the option, if it doesn't work for us, we can give it 24-hour kill them. So it has been working for the landowners. So it's something that you know people need to consider that the Fish and Game is working with us, and the last 2 or 3 years we've had a good rapport with
it. Because it does take care of a lot of valley deer. It does.
Any other discussion? So does anybody want to make a motion on this one for now?
Well, I'd make a motion that we encourage Mr. Snow to pursue it. Have his meetings, like we're going to have a meeting, Talk to Dax, have some meetings, and don't give up on it. Pursue it. It might be just a little premature tonight to get us to support.
Well, I don't know if anybody's come here from the public that actually addresses it that much. Because mainly it is a lot of archer. Landowners along there. And they get free give it, and they should, because they're going into the private land. But they also could be helped if they open it up a little bit more to the public to help it.
Like I said, we don't want to discourage you to not pursue it.
No, I will.
Get some backers, get some meetings, and stay on it.
Issue 7 tonight has a lot of implications on that same.
Which one does?
Item 7, when we get to that. There's a lot of implications on that same tag.
Thank you.
Any other discussion? Anybody want to make a motion on that one? I think our motion basically was, which we're going to encourage you to make more, but I think you want to back to your motion. Did you?
Okay.
I apologize, I got another one here on the comment on this one, but the comment period's over, so apologize for that. We'll do that. So, we're down to the basic presentation now. Entertain a motion, or is there anybody having discussion on the rest of the package? Is there anything else we saw that you liked, you didn't like, that you wanted?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I had a comment for the division. On these two new mid-season limited entry elk hunts, with not really having really good information to go on, because this was the first year we've had this mid-season hunt, between the early season and the late season limited entry elk. I would just caution the division to really kind of watch that closely and make sure that, we're going in the right direction, by adding two more, mid-season limited entry elk hunts on some pretty premier units. At Central Mountains, Manti is a premier elk unit, and I had hoped that that's not going to affect, those other seasons, that the early, in particular, the early season. So, as that moves forward. And I get, why that's being proposed, and kind of move people through the point system and, quicker, but just kind of, it's a little concerning to me to have proposed two more without having, some good information to go on. So.
Okay. Another discussion before we go to motion. Well, we'll entertain a motion.
I would make a motion to accept the division's recommendation with the minor changes we made on these individual issues, which was the two. We agreed with the 7-day extension, and we were going to accept the recommendation on the boundary change that came out of the meeting. The committee that was set up, so what? We accept the divisions as proposed, which included the 7-day with the one loose end of the meeting, I guess.
So I think the motion is that we go with the division's recommendation, like it's presented, with the addition that whatever the outcome of the meeting is going to be, that we accept it.
That would be the correct.
On the diamond up boundary.
I think you made that motion in passing.
No.
You already did.
Yeah.
He's filling it all into
one. Do we recommend that?
On the meeting, yeah.
I think where you're at is just simply to pass the remainder of the Bucksbull's once lifetime recommendations, because the 7 days already passed, and then the meeting outcome, that's already been passed.
That's what I meant. Okay.
Do I have a second on that?
I second.
Mitch seconded. Brett made the motion. Mitch seconded. All in favor? And we got five in favor, and what do you think, Tim?
Not for it.
You're against it. Okay, we got one against it.
It's because of the fact of the buffalo on the wild horse vent area.
Very good. Thank you. Because of the buffalo. Thank you, Justin. All right. We're up to the preference point discussion. Wendy.
Mr. Chairman, I motion we take a 5 minute break.
let's meet back up there a quarter after. We're going to have to go in and.
Meanwhile, there's some goodies on the hands of the table. And there's a refreshment in the cooler down in that end. Should be small.
Yeah, it is. Are you ready?
Okay, thank you. My name is Lindy Varney. I am the Wildlife Licensing Specialist out of the Salt Lake office, and I'm here to present an option to change the preference point system for general season buck deer. So in April, the Wildlife Board asked the division to review the way the preference point drawing for general season buck deer is administered. The main concern that we're hearing from the public is if you draw a permit on your second through fifth choice, you keep your preference points. I just want to point out to you guys that this is a social issue, not a resource issue. I want to give you guys the definition of what a preference point is. A preference point works the best when there are sufficient number of permits to allow all applicants to be successful every few years. This creates certainty that you will draw your preferred permit every few years. A little bit of history on our preference points. They began in the year 2000. At that time, you earned a point if you were unsuccessful for any hunt choice, and you lost your points if you were successful on any hunt choice. This process was changed in 2009. You earned a point if you were unsuccessful for your first choice only, and you didn't lose your points if you drew out on your second through fifth choice. The reason for this change was to help reduce the number of remaining permits, remove the potential for our computer sales system crashing, and to ensure the over-the-counter sales dates had less of an impact on our public and on our system. So I want to explain to you actually how our general season drawing works. This is the order. There's four parts to it. So first is our lifetime deer permits. These are from our lifetime license holders. They are able to get a general season deer permit. So when we get the quota, the first thing that goes off is our lifetime permit. So that goes straight off the quota. Once those are removed, we then evaluate all of our dedicated hunter applications. Once those are evaluated, we move to the youth applications. I just wanted to point out that we do give 20% of our quota to our youth. And if the youth doesn't draw out in this round, their applications actually go into the number four round. So the remaining of the applications. So once all the youth applications are evaluated, that's when we evaluate everyone else. So the adults that haven't drawn and the youth that did not draw out. So if you look at this graph, this shows you the structure of how our current draw system is conducted. So what we do is we first look at the applicants that have the greatest number of preference points first. We evaluate all of their hunt choices first. So we look at their first through fifth choice. Once we evaluate all those applicants with the highest preference points, we then go to the next range. So for example, if I have 4 points and the RAC chairman has 3 points, all of my hunt choices will be evaluated first before we look at his application and see if he can draw for a hunt choice. Also, in our current draw structure, you keep your preference points if you draw out on your second through fifth choice. So this shows you how the last 5 years have played out on our total applications versus successful applications. So as in 2012, we had around 66,000 of our applicants draw out for their first choice. And there was around 26,000 applicants that were unsuccessful, and around 7,500 or 7% of our applicants drew out on their second through fifth choice. This year, in 2016, we had around 68,000 applicants that drew out on their first choice, around 44,000 applicants that were unsuccessful, and around 10,600 or 8% drew out on their second through fifth choice. So at the request of the Wildlife Board, the division is presenting an option to change the way the general season buck deer applications are evaluated. This process, if approved, will allow the division to evaluate everyone's first choice first, beginning with applications with the greatest number of preference points. Then the division would evaluate everyone's second choice and so forth. Also, if you do draw a general season buck deer permit, regardless of the hunt choice, you lose your preference points. So this chart actually shows you what I just talked about, what we're presenting. So if you look here, you can see that we started with the applicants with the greatest number of preference points. We evaluated their first choice first, and then we went to the next point range. So then we evaluated just their first choice and worked all of our way down to the applicants that had 0 points. Then we went back up into people's second choices, and we looked at the applicants that had the greatest number of preference points. And then we worked our way down, and we followed that same structure throughout. With this request from the Wildlife Board, the division did conduct a mock drawing. We wanted to see what it would look like with our current applications. So what we did is we took all the applicants that applied to the 2016 drawing and ran it in this structure to see how it would play out. So this is a comparison between the two drawings. So the green represents our current drawing, and the black represents our mock drawing. And I just want to point out, this is just residents only that are in the state of Utah. So as you can see, in the mock drawing, there was about a 3% increase of applicants that drew their first choice compared to our current drawing. Also, there was about 2,700 less applicants that drew their second choice from the mock drawing. The third through fifth was about the same. There wasn't much of a difference. And our unsuccessful stayed the same, and the ineligible stayed the same. What the ineligible means is those applicants had a limited entry deer application or a dedicated hunter application, and they were successful in that, so then their application for general season became ineligible. So it kind of made me interested to see actually who that 3% was. I wanted to see, you know, if they were applicants that had a lot of points or no points. And this right here shows you that, as you can see, it was the applicants that had 0 points. The majority of the 3% were the applicants with 0 points. Just a little bit of applicants that had 1 point that got their first choice. The applicants that had 2 points up to 11 points, it was about the same, so it didn't really affect them in the mock drawing. We were also wondering how our remaining permits would play out. If everyone applied the same way as they did this year, we actually only had 6 permits difference. So we had 6 more remaining permits in the mock drawing, which is hardly anything. But I do want to give you guys a scenario of what could potentially happen. If applicants decide not to apply for a second through fifth choice because they lose their points, Worst case scenario of remaining permits would be 7,886. Like I said, that's if no one applied for a second through fifth choice. The one thing that the division is requesting, that if the general season buck deer preference point system is changed, we want to use the same approach for all of our other preference point systems. So, of course, that includes our general season buck deer, our antlerless straw, crane, grouse, and swan drawings. Thank you.
Lydia, the way I understand it, because I was at the Wildlife Board meeting when this was discussed, is you might have 4 points, and I might have 2 points, and I put in for my first choice, and you might draw it on your third choice or your second choice, and my concern was, and that's my first choice, why are you drawing it on yours, on your other choice? But I guess the data kind of shows in your mock that that's really not the case.
There's about 10,000 people that, you know, that affects, that draws that. But yeah, it's about 3,000 more people will draw their first choice in the mock drawing system compared to the way we do it now.
So, I mean, that's a social issue. Somebody's drawing ahead of somebody else and had it their first choice. It was the issue.
Yep, that's another of the concern is, that's my first choice. Why don't I have a chance to get my first choice over someone that's their fifth?
And the ones that they're drawing the same tag I wanted, but they're not losing their points.
Exactly.
I was willing to lose my points for it.
Yep.
And they're not losing their points for it.
Correct.
So, let's go to questions. That was my question. Any other questions by the rack?
So is it safe to assume if you buy it over the counter, you do not lose your points?
Yes, that's correct. You don't lose your points for a preference point.
So the issue that's kind of hidden in here is you have a bunch of people putting in for the non-desirable units so they could hunt extended season archery. They never hunt on the unit they put in for as their fifth choice. They put in for box elder or something that never sells out, okay? And then they never go there, and they hunt extended archery up here by Dino Mountain.
That can happen,
Wasatch Front. So that's the issue that kind of makes them numbers not as, I mean, that's your accurate numbers, but you don't know where them people are hunting.
No.
And so the extended archery, now, if I understand it right, the only option to hunt extended archery would be to lose your preference point or buy it over the counter.
Correct, yeah. They'd have to take that risk of if there's one left over. You know, our applications have been increasing each year. And, you know, people ultimately, they want to hunt. And so you're taking that chance of that tag. This year we only had around 900 remaining permits. And and they sold out within a couple of hours.
So I mean, we argued for this last year. Were you the one that presented it?
Yeah, it was in 2014, two years ago.
2 years ago. Yep. And we had a long discussion. Why is it different? And then I don't remember the whole discussion, but it stayed different. So we wanted it changed a couple of years ago, I believe.
Yeah, it was left to stay as status quo back in 2014 because there were such different opinions between the regions at the RAC meetings. And so the board said, let's review it. Let's see what happens. Let's play it out. And this is how it's playing out. It is a social issue that may need to be changed.
Question, Mr. Chairman.
Yep.
How did the other RACs accept it?
Every one of them have passed it.
Mm-hmm. Other questions?
So, your preference points not only help you for your first choice, but your second, third.
Yeah, and this in the mock drawing, they'll still help you.
Under this new proposal.
Yep, because we'll still evaluate your second choice. We'll start with the applicants with the highest number of preference points.
So that they do help.
Yeah, so they still will help you.
Another question by the RAC. Another question by the public. If you've got a question, please step up, say your name.
Jay Keeler. Why did you go with a weighted preference point for the second to fifth choice instead of just doing complete random through there and then still allow people to put in for their first choice they don't draw that, then everybody that puts in through second to fifth choice is a complete random, but you still gain a point. Problem now, you got people that won't be able, you know, they're going to have to wait 3 or 4 or 5 years because this is going to add up the points, because people don't want to, people put in for archery and muzzleloader because they can't draw a rifle, but they won't be doing that if they can't, if they got to wait for the rifle tag.
The reason why we decided, you know, to run it this way that it is and start with the max, you know, start with the highest preference points is because of the design of what a preference point system is. We want to give the hunters that have been applying the longest their opportunity and give them their chance. You know, we've looked at the random, the second through fifth, you know, and we'll still have some of the social issue out there. People will still say, well, they drew my second choice when it was their fourth choice, if it's random.
No, it's random. Anyone who put in on a first choice would be leftovers after that.
But ours, you know, my data has shown that the majority of our hunters apply for the exact same unit, just a different weapon type. And they want to hunt, and they're saying, hey, I will hunt that same unit with a rifle.
Your mock drawing is not going to be accurate with the way you've got it right here.
What do you mean?
You're going to see a lot of different movement.
Yeah, and we do every year.
Yeah, because people are putting in because they know they'll still be able to get the tag. Like he said, we'll get an archery tag and hunt extended areas. You're going to see a big difference in these numbers. So it's not going to be accurate.
No, like I said, this is round with how people apply now. And we know that, you know, people may change the way of applying, but it's hard to predict what people will do. You know, a lot of people, like I said, apply for the exact same unit, different weapon types, and they will be willing to lose their points for the exact same unit. I hunt with two different weapons. I apply for rifle.
I don't have three weapons, so. But I just see I just don't see why you have to give away your points.
You know, that's
you got your second to third. Your second choice shouldn't have any. Shouldn't be a preference point at all. Shouldn't even be weighted on preference points. Should be your first choice is the only one that should matter. Your points should matter.
Yeah, so if you have 4 points. I can cut you off a word. We're just in the question portion. We're going to let you do the comments here in just a second. Any other questions? Comments? Jake, jump up there. You're the only one we got.
So, if your first point, the first point applicant, if you have 4 points, your first choice, you should draw, yeah, you should lose all your points. If you're drawing a second choice, it's because nobody wanted it as a first choice. So, and I don't agree with the straight across method. If you have 4 points, you have more points than everybody in the second point pool. Should be like Colorado. Colorado does a preference point system just like we do, or just similar to ours, except for, and I agree with getting rid of the, if you draft 4 points and you have a third choice, you shouldn't get that tag over someone who put in for it with first choice.
See, that's what this does.
But, so do that, and then make second through third choice complete random. Not weighted on how many points you have. It's a complete random draw. That's how it should be.
So everybody's name goes to have
one time. Or, and then you don't lose your points, and then people can still build points for the season hunt they want. Yeah, I know people are willing to give up some points to hunt the unit they want, but the mock drawing is not going to be accurate. You got thousands of people that are used to the system now because it's been in place for so long, and they figured out how to work around it. The loophole that she talked that you're getting away with is there's lots of people that know about that, and I agree with getting rid of that. That's completely logical. But you shouldn't have your second, third, fourth, fifth. You shouldn't lose your points because you drew that tag and not your first choice.
But isn't that the only way you can make people hunt the unit they put in for?
What do you mean?
Right now they're not hunting the units they're putting in for. They're putting in for a unit somewhere just so they can kind of extend it somewhere.
Well, you get a lot of, you make it like that, you're going to have gobs of leftover box elder tags. Nobody wants to hunt box elder unit. Apparently. I've never been there. I don't know what it's like. I think I've had to tag before.
Then they would buy them over the counter to hunt extended.
Exactly. Correct. And that's just going to put a bit... So why not let those people... Instead of having a big rush to for people to go to the store to get their box elder tags that they're never going to buy, let them do it in the draw. The reason you had the 900 application, or it's 900, yeah. The reason your leftovers have dropped every year is because people are realizing, oh, well, if I put in for all the way to my fifth choice, I can get this tag and still hunt the box elder. I know hundreds of people, well, I can't say hundreds, but I know a lot of people in the Unibasin that have put the box elder unit as a fifth, box elder archery as a fifth choice, just so they can hunt extended archery. I mean, if you did away with the whole, if you did away with points on your second through third choice, and still let people put in for the hunt they wanted, build points for the hunt they wanted, that's the system they should go with. I can't. Has this even been brought up in any of the other racks?
Yeah, it's been up, brought up in the majority of the racks. You know, I just want to point out that if you start doing that, you guys talk about point creep. That will happen because people are going to start building up their points, and we're not going to be solving the issue. The purpose of a preference point drawing is to get people through the system. I gave you the definition of what a preference point system is, and we want people to be able to be successful every few years, not every 5 or 6 years. That's a limited entry hunt. You know, the purpose of a general season tag is so you can go hunt a unit every 1 to 2 years, and if we do a random and people save up their points, their first choice is going to keep being built up because they're holding out for that unit. And so it's going to take 5, 6, 7 years to draw for that general season tag versus 1 to 2 years, and that's the whole purpose of a preference point system, not a limited entry. Mm-hmm. And you know, and then that creates that certainty of knowing that you can draw your second choice because you have 4 points. If you do random, I can have 0 points and still draw out my second choice versus someone that has 4 points and not get that second choice. And so you don't have that certainty of knowing that you're going to draw.
All right, matter of opinion.
But, you know, no, it is, and it's a great, you know, like I said, I love that you're here talking about it, you know, that you have the passion for the drawing. I do. I appreciate your comments, and you're putting your time and effort into it.
Because that's the real issue with point creep, right?
Yeah.
That is the real issue behind this.
You're going to have point creep no matter what.
It's well, when you...
resource.
Exactly. You know, we don't... It's supply and demand. You know, we have 130 applications this in 2016 and 90,000 tags. You know, but we want to be able to get it to where people can draw their preferred unit every few years, because that's the where we live now. That's how it is with hunting. But
all right.
No, but thank you.
Thank you, Jake. All right, that's all the comments we had on this one. Discussion by the rack.
Is this general season preference points only versus limited entry?
Yeah, this only affects our general season.
Is there thoughts to look into the other ones, or would it make sense?
What do you like?
To look into the once in a lifetime and those things, would that make any difference?
No, this is how we run the system, kind of like this right now with our entry. This is how limited entry is ran.
So this is general.
But this is just our general season preference points.
Okay.
There's the species I listed right here that this will affect. And it won't affect the cow moose because that is a bonus point.
A bonus point,
yep.
Versus preference point.
Exactly.
Okay.
So what are people getting up to as far as like number of preference points for just general deer? Is it getting up to 4, 5, 6? Like,
well, that takes a draw out.
Yes.
We have a unit that takes 5 years.
That's
your Thousand Lakes unit.
But that's because people are using the loophole.
Yeah.
That they can draw people other. Same unit other people putting in for first choice. They're drawing that hunt on their third choice because they're putting in for that Thousand Lakes unit.
Sure.
But now they can draw and lose those points, and go back to the bottom and get people going.
Yeah. Get people through the system.
Yep.
I like that.
And then
I like that they lose their points once they draw it.
So. Like they have them in, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I like that, too, just not for the second and fifth choice. Mm-hmm.
But people will loophole that angle, too, don't you think?
You can't loophole that. That's not, I mean, that's...
Well, if you put in
that's
for...
That's people waiting for the tag that they truly want. The way that you're going to do this is just going to create a lot of leftover tags that people are going to run to the store and buy. And I that's my personal opinion. Maybe I'm wrong.
We don't know exactly. Like I said, I gave you the max number of remaining. But I highly doubt we'll be that high. People want to hunt.
Yeah.
They want to go out and have that family experience. They want to be out in the outdoors. And so
what kind of outreach are you going to put out there so people know that this is in place?
Yeah, that's a good point. Honestly, yeah.
I talk to people every year that have no idea how the system works right now.
Exactly. So we've already kind of thought about this because as the rackings have gone through, we weren't quite sure how it was going to go. We're actually going to have a whole page in the guidebook dedicated to this, showing one thing that Justin and I are working with our outreach section is actually putting that graph, you know, that I just showed you guys of how this right here, and explain it to them. Another thing that I want to do is in the application is have, if you click on general season deer to apply, a screen pops up and say, hey, this has changed, please review. You're going to lose your points. This is how it's now done. So we can definitely get the word out. I want to put a pamphlet in all of our agents that sell our licenses. So when they go to get a guidebook, they will know that this is changing. We want to educate our hunters. And, you know, that's our main concern.
The pop-up is a good idea.
Yeah.
Just an informational question.
Yeah.
Will this create, this new system, will it create more over-the-counter tags?
It could.
Could.
It could. Just because we
be a bad thing?
Depends on how you look at it.
You can't get your second or third, but the more of the county, you can go get on the
so that's how the that is actually the loophole. People only put in for their first choice and then wait in line.
But that's a risk. That's a gamble.
It is a risk, but people are going to use it.
You could take all your kids. I mean, over the counter might not be a bad thing because three of you or four of you in the same family could all have the same unit for once.
Yeah, you know, we do offer youth tags. I don't know if you guys have ever noticed. We give 20% above the quota for our youth for archery tags. So we already sell a lot of general season tags over the counter.
Do you let people put in as a party for the general season?
Yeah, up to four.
Up to four, okay.
Mm-hmm.
So that issue's probably not real.
You know, our applications increase by almost 7% each year for general season. It's so, you know, remaining permits, sooner or later they're going to be all gone. And it just depends on when.
And the other RACs all passed this.
They have, yeah.
Another discussion by the RAC. We'll entertain a motion on this one.
I motion that we pass the preference point system amendments as presented by the division.
That was made by Dave. Do I have a second?
I will second that.
Brett, second it. All in favor? Unanimous. It's six.
I'd just like to make a comment. This young man made some good points. He had a good argument.
Yeah, we might be back in about 3 years. We'll do this one more time.
Well, you never
know.
We'll
try this.
You never know.
Yeah.
Try it something.
That's the idea. To make it better.
They're already limited. You can't hunt every year.
That's true.
Generally limited entry. It's all limited entry.
All right, we'll go to Kobe Jones. No, Lando.
I'll be back up whenever you get home.
This is
where you get home.
You can skip me. All right, we can just vote right now to accept the plan. We're good. Tonight, every 5 years, our habitat monitoring crew goes around the state. We call it our range trend crew that goes around the state and reads the different habitat monitoring sites we have across the state. The Forest Service cooperates with this and BLM cooperates with it. It's a process that we go through. And as we rotate to the different regions,
last year was our turn to have the Habitat crew out here. They came out and read the monitoring sites for our region, and then that fall we go through and recommend do updates on our deer management plans for our individual units. Excuse me, I got a frog in my throat. We've got five units in our region that we'll be covering tonight here that we're updating those plans, and the primary things that are adjusted on these are population objectives. The buck-doe ratios, those kind of things are set in the statewide deer plan, so we aren't adjusting those. The main things really that change much on these are the population objective and identify any specific needs on a unit. So we're going to start off tonight first with the 9-mile unit. Most of these units we're going to go through tonight have two subpopulation population objectives for the different wintering areas. For example, this one has 11B is the 9-mile Range Creek portion, the portion that's on the southeast region's side of the mountain. The blue line here, that blue dotted line across there, is the objective for Unit 11A, which is the Anthro Mountain subunit of the 9-mile, and that has a population objective of 2,500. You can see the solid lines down below correlate is an estimate of our population estimates for these subunits each year. The red line correlates with the red dotted line across the top and so forth. And so you can see right now the Range Creek unit, the population objective is 6,000 deer. We're at about 5,100 deer currently. On the 9-mile Anthro, the population objective is 2,500. We are currently at 1,700 deer. when we go through all our, looking at, there are quite a few habitat sites on each of these units, so we've had to kind of lump them together to do a summary. And in general, on the 9-mile unit, north and south, both the range trend indicates stable to increasing trend, which means that the habitat conditions are doing well on this unit. There, we see no habitat concerns or real problem areas. This unit has very limited depredation considerations. Very few. What are there are addressed easily with our current depredation programs. We're recommending no changes for the population objectives on this unit for the 9-mile unit, on either subunit. We'll move on next to the Book Cliffs. The Book Cliffs population here, again, is split. It has two separate subpopulation objectives. The blue dotted line across the top there is for the North Book Cliffs in the roadless area. That is for 10AC. 10,000 deer is the management or population objective for the North. And you can see the dotted red line down below is the 5,000 is for the Book Cliffs South, which would be in the southeast region too. The solid blue line gives you an indication of population estimate for the north, which is at 5,200 deer right now. The south being at about 2,500. You can tell both those are basically right around 50% of the objectives for this unit. Book Cliffs is not at the population level I would like to see it be at currently. As we look at the range trend out there, look at the habitat monitoring sites. The range trends on the north shows a stable and actually a really increasing trend on the north. Habitat conditions on the north, in spite of the drought, are actually still doing fairly well. And look good. The south does, on the south side of the Book Cliffs, we do see some range quality issues that are there in some areas where some cheatgrass is taking over and dominating some of the sites down there. And some of those areas will be emphasized in the plan for future habitat work and things like that. Depredation considerations on the Book Cliffs, again, is fairly minimal compared to other units. There are a few localized areas with depredation, but they're handled pretty easily. One of the other unique issues that is brought up on the Book Cliffs in the management plan is it's a very predator, or has a higher predator density than most other units in the state. It truly does, and that can be a little bit more of an issue on this unit. It is a unit that's currently managed under predator management for cougars and for coyotes, and there's a treated predator management out there is taken pretty serious, and we do take that a little more aggressive on our predator management. Where these population objectives, again, to summarize down below, that we've recommended no changes for these, for the population objectives on either of the subunits, leave them like they are. The next unit to move along is the South Slope. Here again, we have two subunit populations. The one being the red dotted line, both the population objectives, the old objectives have been the exact same at 13,000. The eastern portion is represented by the red line there. That's the Book Cliffs, the South Slope Vernal Diamond Bonanza subunit, all three of those combined. It is currently over objective a little bit at 13,200, pretty close to objective, of course, but a little over right there and doing quite well. The blue line indicate is it gives a, an indication of the south slope Yellowstone subunit. You can see it's a little below objective there at 97,000 under the 13.
That slide is that a little misleading? Of that the red, shouldn't it be up there about halfway between the 12 and the 14?
I'm not sure why I just realized that too. You heard me pause for a minute. That's why I realized we got the line on the wrong. I've given this five times. It's the first time I just noticed that line's wrong. So yeah, it's in the wrong place. So I'll have to correct that. But yes, it should be at 13,000. So good catch. The south slope, to summarize for that unit, the range conditions on there are generally stable. We do have a slight declining trend in a couple of the sites that are there. Those are the sites primarily that are tied back to the old sagebrush die-off that we had. If you remember, you know, hearing about that 10 years ago, we had a pretty serious die-off in some areas, and essentially those areas, the sagebrush was really replaced a lot with cheatgrass. Is what's happened now. The sagebrush died off at that point. We've now got a lot of an annual system of grass and weeds there that we need to keep targeting and working on. We targeted a couple of those for some habitat improvements in the past, and those sites are all trending upward and have really improved since the treatments. But there are still several areas we need to target for habitat improvements. They're identified in the plan to target those areas and continue with those, and particularly those areas that have the annual cheatgrass type in dominance there. And some of our burn areas too even have some similar concern we address in the plans. You know, forest BLM may be interesting. Some of these old burns have also got a pretty good component of annual grasses that are continuing to increase, and so we need to make sure we stay on top of those. So that's something that's addressed in this plan. Depredation on the south slope, there is a fair amount of it just by the amount of private lands across the Yellowstone and the Bernal units, and those, there's quite a bit there, but they're all addressed through what we talked about tonight with the extended archery hunt. It's one of the methods. There's also mitigation permits and various depredation permits that are offered to the landowners to try to address some of those problems and work fairly well. What's really interesting to me, though, is even with some of those trends up there, that habitat declining in a few areas, we do see that second point right there that when we do our annual catching and survival monitoring for deer, we capture and radio collar deer every year on these units each winter. And as we catch them, we actually bring those deer in. They get a kind of a full physical by our vet and some of the other researchers that are there. They get actually have ultrasounds done to them to get body fat scores, take measurements of body fats, check pregnancies, everything else that goes with that. And we come up with a body condition estimate on these animals. And we're consistently got some of the highest in the state for the body conditions. So the deer are in good shape, particularly over here on the east side. They seem to be doing quite well, and so we have recommended a slight increase there from 13,000 to 15,000 on the objective for the east half, the Vernal Diamond Bonanza subpopulation. The next unit we'll talk about here is Wasatch East. The Wasatch Mountains West, which is the portion of the central region, was done a couple years ago when they read those habitat plots over there. We're not affecting that at all tonight. This is just the Wasatch East, the portion that would be in our region. The blue line here with the dotted line again being objective of 15,000 deer, the solid blue line being the population estimate, represents the Wasatch Mountains Current Creek subunit. That population, as you look at that, you can see the last 4 years we've had some great survival rates, great production. We've just had phenomenal winters over there, great combinations, and actually pretty good, even some decent growing seasons in the summer. We've had some good summer rain that's produced some good deer over there, and it's doing well. It's exceeded the population objective. The red line near the bottom is the Wasatch Mountains Aviniquin subpopulation, objective of 3,500, and we basically are at that population estimate right now, is at that objective, right, with that population. On the Wasatch Mountains East, the rain trend over there indicates that it's stable to increasing. It's doing well. We've done a tremendous amount of winter range improvements. There's a lot of state DWR land on some of the winter ranges over there that have seen some real neat habitat works been accomplished there and really improved the wintering carrying capacity for some of those areas. We do have some depredation considerations. Again, we do have a fair amount of private property in places on these on the 17B. Those are addressed through the plans and various mitigation permits. We are recommending increases on both subunits on the Wasatch Mountains East from 15,000 deer up to 20,000 for the objective for that subunit, and from 3,500 up to 5,000 deer on that for the population objective. Last unit we'll talk about tonight is the North Slope. This unit is lumped together into one population objective, even though there are separate subunits on this unit. It's just one pooled population objective. You can see here, too, that this population has been doing very well for the last 4 and 5 years. We've had good combinations of good weather there, too, have benefited some of these deer that are doing well. The range condition on the north slope across those, the range trend, everything is at least stable, if not increasing, and doing well. We are seeing a decrease in deer utilization of some of the browse and those kind of things, and so the carrying capacity of those deer seems to be there to provide for what's there, even though we're been over the objective. The depredation considerations up there, too, are minimal, easily addressed. One of the unique things is those of you who know Manila, if Manila can be called urban, we do have an urban deer problem up in Manila. They've got a good 100 to 150 basically town deer that have moved in there and are pretty much residents. The conflict is, of course, half the residents love them and half of them hate them. And would like to have them gone. Some of them love them, though, and don't want you to touch them. What we put in the plan and decide to do is we will, once the city council and the mayor agree and decide what they want to do and request any help from us to help address those, we would go and assist them according to our policies on how we can address some of those problems in town. We are recommending a population increase to basically where we are right now, up to about a 10,000 deer population objective. And that's it. If there are any questions.
Thank you, Randall. Questions by the rack?
Can you, when I read the, it wasn't, you didn't have the graph up here, but when I read the full document on the Vernal subunit, you're right at population objective and the range condition had concerns?
Yes.
So why did you ask for an increase on that?
That's the one that we actually are, it's exceeding the population carrying capacity right now. We have specific areas, the habitat type, you know, certain areas basically, localized areas that we have habitat concerns, and that's where we've had the drought. It wasn't deer overutilization that's changed the habitat. It's been more of that sagebrush die-off we had and then subsequent replacement with cheatgrass that's been the issue. We're not as worried. The reason we feel comfortable still recommending an increase here is the fact that the body condition on these deer is still excellent compared to the other deer in the
if
state.
If we get a hard winter, you're not concerned that poor condition with a higher population would...
As long as we continue to see the good body condition, we're in as good a shape as we can possibly probably be in the state. Definitely, we are going to have a hard winter. You're right, Brett. We will. You know, we all know that. It will come around again. We will see reduced survival rates on those years for sure. You know, we're still not going to be as good as we could be. But when the deer seem to be still in very good shape, in spite of the fact that we do have a few of these areas that we kind of have lost a lot of some habitat in some certain areas, that's for sure. But we don't believe we've exceeded a carrying capacity just because the body condition of these animals continues to be in pretty good shape. So, good question, though.
Ben?
Can you go to your booklet slide there? Population objective and population.
This one or the graph?
The graph, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, so what is the division? So I guess population estimates like 5,000?
5,200 is the current estimate, yeah.
But it looks like for the past... what, 6-7 years it's been, you know, right there, you know, right around 5,000 or whatever.
Yeah.
But the objective
under 6,000 anyway, yeah.
The objective is 10,000. What is the division doing to try and get to that objective? I mean, it just seems, what's going on there? I mean, are we ever going to get there?
We may never get back there. We may not. You know, that's a legitimate answer to a good question on it. We may not. We believe we have the capacity, carrying capacity to do that. The habitat seems to be there.
Uh-huh.
It's not it doesn't appear to be the habitat issue that's limiting out there for us. We do have a very limited summer range out there. And some of the issues that have been brought up earlier tonight have been our concerns out there. We do have a real feral horse or wild horse problem that's out there. You know, maybe there are some grazing concerns out there in some of these places, but they're at least the normal problems on the winter range. We definitely have winter range to support them. What's limiting the Bookcliffs quite a lot is most of the time is summer range type of issues that go with that. And so, those can almost be harder for us to address than the winter range issues. Winter range, we know how, really we're pretty good at fixing winter range these days. We finally learned the techniques and things to go in and rehab winter range areas. Summer range gets to be hard because it's pretty much water limited and things. And so we are have done, for example, this year they put in 30 plus. How many guzzlers have they put in this year? I know it's at least 30 this year that they've added.
Last year it was 22.
22 last year. So We have done a lot to increase the water availability, and which can distribute deer out into some better other areas that they currently haven't been able. Water's been a limiting factor out there, one of them, one of many. And I'd like Clint to speak to some other issues here too in just a minute. But predator management, this is one of the units that we have in predator management for lions and for coyotes out there, are targeted essentially with it. They have increased efforts, special efforts put in there with Wildlife Services every year on coyotes. And the cougar are basically, we switched them over to harvest objective type of harvest, which is increasing our lion harvest and some of those kind of things out there too. Do you have others you want to address, Clint?
We've tried to increase bear permits, and here in a few more weeks we're going to have, you know, another RAC meeting, and that's a great thing to keep in the back of your minds when we start hearing from, you know, other sportsmen and their views. But I echo what Randall says.
And it may take a while to get, it will likely take a number of years to get this population going again.
That's our question. Your statement, wild horses do affect the deer habitat?
They impact all the vegetation out there, and when they...
The deer habitat.
Yeah, they actually can. Horses, they really do eat 24-7, as you know, you've watched yours probably do. They just chow all day long, and they do impact it, whether it's just the trampling and chewing on anything that is green and what gets there. There's definitely some impacts from some of those horses out there.
I can see them really hurting me out. They do the deer too.
They do. Not as direct. It's not the 100% direct competition like it is with elk. We're grass for grass, but those horses out there are eating even some browse species and stuff. Anything that's green and soft, they're taking. And same with the feral cattle. We get the feral cows out there too.
Yep. The damage around the water areas, the riparian areas, water holes,
everything water.
Horses can be very dominant over those areas and can keep wildlife.
And again, book this with a limited summer range when you're fighting for what little bit of green is good up there, and especially when we've been in a drought cycle for sure for, you know, all these years in the book list. It makes it tough. You're, you know, anything that's green out there, it becomes another mouth to competition for it that way.
What is the hunter satisfaction trend doing for the book list unit for deer?
It's coming up a little bit. You can get the actual numbers for you. Just give me 1 second, Dan. For a while there, it was, you know, not the greatest, but it seems like the past few years, you know, we're seeing hunters take a little bit better bucks, and you know, success rate is always very, very high out there, especially for the archery. It has probably one of the highest success rates for the archery hunt statewide. It's incredible.
Sure.
But as far as satisfaction, you know, out of five, mm-hmm. The archery sits at about a four. So four out of five, so that's pretty high. Like I say, the archery hunt, though, is a phenomenal hunt out there. The rifle hunts sit around three out of five as far as satisfaction. The muzzleloader's a little over 3.5, 3.7 out of five. And those archery and muzzleloader hunts are really, really great because you can scout for those hunts, because like Randall said, the deer are still kind of on their summer range.
Right.
So you can scout those bucks up in June and they're still going to be there in September.
Mm-hmm.
So it gives you a little bit more of opportunity that way. The multi-season or our premium tag sits right at three. So like I say, people aren't, you know, disgusted with it, but there's probably definitely room for it.
Sure. Thanks.
And like I say, like you've heard today, you know, there's people that spend a lot of time out there that would like to see things better.
Sure. Well, and that's kind of what I hear, you know. Just
we'll make a point too. There's probably been more habitat work, restoration work done out in the book list per square mile, you know, per square mile than anywhere in the state of Utah.
Believe that.
It's so great.
It's a pet peeve of mine because I'd like to see it in other places, but it gets done in book lists, I promise.
Easy access.
Yeah. And I'm a good cooperator.
Are you recording this, Clint?
I love it. Ask him some more questions.
About the book, but how great it is, yeah.
I'm good.
Any other questions about Iraq? Public questions. Any questions? We've got one comment. Blake Bess, you want to step up, state your name, and ask a question?
Blake Bess, dedicated hunter. I just want to let the rack know to take a look at these numbers you're looking at tonight, and when the tag numbers come up, just keep that in head. We're 50% below objective here. I mean, something's got to be done after 3 months of hunting pressure and hunting. It's what's left to do the breeding. Well, junk box that nobody wanted to shoot. I mean, the book cliffs is hurting, and everybody knows it, and we need to take consideration of these graphs and think about that when the time comes. And also a little concerned about the South Slope Yellowstone general deer herd. I don't think it's doing quite as good as they're boasting it to be. The third day of general deer season, they was on the radio saying everything was a success, and I agree it was, but we need to take consideration that success rates were high this year, and upcoming on our tag numbers, we just need to remember these numbers. Thank you.
Thank you, Blake. Come on. All right, we're up to discussion by the rack. Any discussion? Well, we'll entertain a motion. Anybody want to make a motion?
I'll make a motion. We accept the proposal that Adam's made from the DWR as presented.
Okay, that was made by Mitch. Do I have a second?
I'll second it.
Dave seconded it. All in favor?
All abstain.
We've got five in favor and one abstention. You have a reason for extension there, Tim?
Like I said before in the other rack meetings, the deer are just starting to do good, and then they will come with more tags, and I just don't agree with that.
No, you're aware, Tim, that we're not talking about tags, right?
The deer herd?
Yeah, we're not talking about number of tags in this presentation.
By actually increasing our population objectives, this reduces the likelihood that we'll go in with have to have a doe hunt or anything like that in these areas and stuff like this at this time. This is just the population of how many deer we want out there on the mountain is what these numbers are. We're voting.
So you're trying to bring
deer
up or take them back down?
We're raising up the numbers of deer we can have out there is what we're trying to do tonight. That's what this is. Not permit numbers. This is number of deer we can have out on the mountain.
I'm just wanting to make sure you're aware.
All right, thank you, Randall. We're up to the CWMU management plan for men members, and we'll turn it to Kobe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Kobe Jones. I'll be presenting the Bucks and Bulls numbers for 2017 CWMUs. Okay, so we divide this up. Really quick, we'll divide it up into new applications, renewal applications, and change applications. There are three things that have to be approved in a change application by the RACs and the board. One is a change in voucher permit allocation, another is change in season dates, and another is change in acreage. So this year, division, we received 9 new applications. One of those was to dissolve the Missouri Flat and Black Point CWMUs down on the Pavon, and to combine those into one Pavon Ensign, and then 8 other new applications. Received 13 renewal applications, and 9 CWMUs asked for some changes, for a total of 31 applications were reviewed. So just as a look at this program by region, there are 132 CWMUs in the state of Utah now, and the majority of those are obviously in the northern region, but there are CWMUs spread out throughout the rest of the state. I think the important thing here is that this encompasses a lot of land, a lot of acreage, 2.3 million acres, and 97% of that is private. A quick breakdown of the permits and vouchers. For private landowners, we're we're allowing 3,000 vouchers there. And the important part here, too, is that there are 503 public sportsmen that are getting access to ground that they probably otherwise wouldn't, without a trespass fee or anything else, be able to hunt that ground. And just as a reminder, where the opportunity really is in the antlerless. 322 vouchers going to private landowners and over 1,200 permits going to our public sportsmen. So breaking it down by region. In the northern region, the new applications there, Cedar Springs, Meekum Ridge, Royal Ivory Outfitters and Snowville Flat for pronghorn deer and moose. And we recommend approval on all of these. These are all new. Also in the northern region, there were a lot of renewals. Point out here that it's amazing, managing the elk population objectives. We've really had to work with Sedum Mews and some of these private land dominated units. And this time, a couple of the Sedum Mews in Unit 5 especially stepped up and they've worked with us. Hardscrabble was willing to progressively increase their antlerless elk permits to assist in herd management. And Mount Top in that same unit as well is willing to increase their antlerless elk permits. Tail Bar Ranch added doe pronghorn. And Jacobs Creek dropped elk from the Cedar Moon. In the northern region, the change applications, Deseret had some land, quite a few acres, but it really didn't make a good boundary. It was added to the CWU a couple years ago. They since came in and said, look, this really doesn't work. We agreed with that. It's probably not the best thing to add to their CWU, so they removed it. And we adjusted vouchers accordingly. Double Cone has some public ground inside the CWU, and so they came with some more trade land, almost 3,000 acres of trade land to allow access to private ground off the CWU, and that changed the voucher distribution. George Creek requested, they had some antlerless deer vouchers for depredation. They requested to reduce those, and Ingham Peak added bull moose to their, they started to have moose show up in the area, so they added bull moose to the CWU. North Peaks, which was previously Twin Peaks, increased elk vouchers and decreased deer vouchers. In the southeastern region, we had some renewal applications. Mini Mod is requesting 10 additional deer vouchers, and Red Ranch is renewed with no changes. We recommend approval of both of those. In the southeastern region, change applications. Hiawatha increased acreage to where they qualify for an additional bull elk voucher. We recommend that. Indian Head moved their deer season to the later season. And Schofield Canyons requested an additional 2 bull elk vouchers, which was more equitable with what they're receiving on the rest of the unit. And it seems to be sustaining the age objective and everything, so we recommend approval there as well. In the southern region, this is one we talked about before, the Black Point Missouri Flat were purchased and combined into one CWU offering deer, elk, turkey, and pronghorn. Recommend approval there. In the central region, Allen Ranch went away for a year in 2016. They reapplied in 2017 as a pronghorn. Deer Creek, and this is one that is important. There's an asterisk there. We do recommend approval. However, this is one of the CWUs we've had some problems with. Just to cut straight to the point, it had very low public hunter success. And our observations let us, and the feedback we were getting from the public hunters was this was more of a private hunting club and didn't take into consideration the importance of the public hunter. There were several times the public hunter, it's just a deer seat of mew, but the public hunter would show up and they would have elk hunters in front of them. They wouldn't let them onto the property, they'd have them wait at the gate. We've had quite a few discussions with this operator, and this comes along with a letter. There are certain conditions he has to meet in satisfaction with his public hunters, and that if they want to continue as a seat of mew. If they don't meet those, you'll probably see us back requesting to revoke the COR. Rock House is a new deer CWU in the central region. And Bear Mountain on the Manti, they requested an additional 3 deer vouchers. In the northeastern region, Cottonwood Ridge, this is CWU that Derek proposed. It will hopefully help with some depredation issues and bring some value to private landowners for those animals and allow some access for public sportsmen. Recommend approval there too. And that's all.
Thank you, Kobe. I guess I got a couple of questions first. Do you have a slide that actually shows what they qualify for compared to what the proposal they're going to get?
So, yeah, that's a good question. We did that analysis with the board just barely in September, and we went through, and I don't have a slide that shows that here with me. But we don't recommend in excess of what they qualify for, but there are other things that we take into consideration. You know, a lot of the deer season we use are on general season units. If you just took it straight off acres, they're way below what they would qualify for because they manage their properties for a higher quality deer or elk. With elk, there are other considerations. And that would be, are they maintaining the average age? You know, we have the unit, the average age on the unit, 5.5 to 6, 6.5 to 7, whatever it is. Are they able to maintain and sustain what we're managing for around them? Do they have higher quality or lower quality habitat? Because everybody knows that elk are not ubiquitously distributed across the landscape, and they will pick and harbor in other areas. So I guess in the answer to your question is no, I don't have that slide. But we did that analysis, and we felt like everything was in line, and we presented that to the board.
But I guess I was at the board meeting a year or so ago, and there was an individual got up and had a CWMU, and he was requesting some additional tags because his wasn't one of our CWMUs, but he wanted additional tags with farm member rights because his neighbors were getting them, and they didn't qualify for them, but he didn't either, but he was requesting them because they were getting them, and the board said, no, you know, you got to go by the qualification and then ask, you know, the division to make it equitable for him and the rest of them. Mm-hmm. And did we resolve that with him?
He's one of these.
Hiawatha?
Yep, that's Hiawatha. Or Schofield Canyons, actually. It's the same individual that runs both CWMUs. And yeah, we took a look at it. They're meeting average age. They're meeting everything. And it made sense to add the bull elk pastures in that instance. Okay. And so I think one of the differences is before there, when we went on straight acreage calculations, we recommended no. And then when we reevaluated and presented to the board, it made sense. It didn't look like it would impact the resource. And so we said, okay.
Thank you.
That was interesting. What is the minimum acreage on these CWMUs?
Perfect.
I always thought it was 10,000 acres.
It is for moose or elk. For deer, it's deer and pronghorn, it's 5.
It's 5, so that, okay.
So, there are several that are just a deer, just a pronghorn, and they meet that minimum 5. But to be elk, you have to be 10.
Do you get many variances where you could be 8,500 or...
You know, there are some grandfathered, because the minimum acreage didn't used to be that. And so there are some CWMUs that operate below that 10. But no, there's a variance process. But really, the reason we changed that to 10 is because of the problems that we found when we had CWMUs that were less than that.